Blog Talk Radio.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, it's David Chang.
Is it me, man, or is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room. And if you look on, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.
Good evening, boxing fans. This is David Chen, and welcome to another edition of the Leave It in the Ring radio show. Real quick, a quick announcement. On the 28th of November, a reminder, at the Spotlight 29 Casino in Coachella, California, Champion Promotions will be putting on a show called Clash of the Gladiators, featuring some of the local professional fighters. So keep an eye out for more information on that on our website, www.bluffightshow.com, in the upcoming weeks. I believe we have our hosts on the line. 97 Ruff, Blood, Chris from Sacramento, and Strikehearts from Pennsylvania. How you guys doing?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
Not too bad. A little bit tired. A little bit busy right now, but we'll survive.
What you tired for? You ain't did nothing. You ain't doing nothing. You ain't doing no work, man.
Nah, bro. I got six college courses this semester since I'm graduating. So right now it's midterm time. So I've been working on papers. You know, six different exams over 2 weeks, things like that, man.
What on, man? Well, we got a packed show, like always. We got Andre Durrell that's going to be coming in about a half an hour from now. Then after Andre Durrell, we're going to have Steve, I believe his last name is Len, from Top Rank, a social media worker for them, who's going to be calling in, dropping some info about the Manny Pacquiao and Cotto fight that's coming up in Vegas. There's a chance that some listeners may be able to win to meet both guys during the weigh-in in Las Vegas. Also, you know, our buddies, our partners and stuff, Boxing Truth is throwing away some free tickets, two tickets to the November 6th Zab Judah fight coming up. You know, so have a chance to listen in on their show Sunday night. And try to, you know, I guess it's like, I don't know how they're really going to work it, but they're giving it away to listeners that want to tune in and try to go see, hopefully, when Zab Judah steps into the ring November 6th, okay? But other than that, man, we got a pack house. We also got, we're having the filmmaker and creator of Born and Bred, a documentary film about boxing amateur fighters following their career. It looks like a great movie. If you haven't checked it out, you know, we'll put a link up on our website so you can check out the trailer of this movie coming out. It's something, man, that I think everybody's going to be happy. His name is Justin Framer. I believe his last name is pronounced Framer. So he should be coming in later on in the late hour of the show. But other than that, man, let's tackle some news, David Chen. What news do we got going on in the boxing world that everybody should know about?
Well, a decent piece of news is that they finally decided to make the rematch between Pauly Malignaggi and Juan Diaz, and it looks like that's going to be happening on December 12th in Chicago. And on that same event, Victor Ortiz will be returning to the ring against Antonio Diaz. So, I mean, Malignaggi and Diaz, that might be a decent rematch that a lot of people weren't satisfied about. So this is a fight that people wanted, and now it's happening.
Interesting, especially Antonio Diaz and Victor Ortiz. I mean, that's a pretty good name to make a comeback against, you know, because, you know, Diaz, is a veteran warrior, a guy that can give you some problems in the ring. You know, his last outing, it was a little tough for him. He was getting hit a lot, but he was taking the punches and returning them. So Victor Ortiz taking a big, huge step up against Antonio Diaz, who's been around with some of the best fighters in the world, like Sugar Shane Mosley and whatnot. You know, so this is a guy that really can see whether or not he has, if Victor has his bearings back to be in the ring. So interesting matchup. You know, I heard there's another matchup there they're trying to make up right now, Blood. I think this is probably one of the best ones. In my opinion, just hearing the two names together, you can already hear this is going to be bad blood between the both of these guys. Kendall Holt versus Nate Campbell. What's your thoughts about that?
Oh, man. Hey, man, I love to see that one. Just seeing the pre-hype for that fight would be enough for me, man. As long as they can keep their cool before the fight. Hey, I hope that fight goes through, bro. I mean... What more can you say? Kendall Holt and Nate Campbell. And it gives Nate Campbell a chance to get back in the mix, man. You know, I mean, he feels like he was done wrong in that last fight. So here's his chance to show and prove. We just don't want to hear nothing. This is your last chance. We don't want to hear nothing no more after this.
You know what? You're right, man, because these are two guys that can really hold their own when it comes to starting, you know, trash talking. This is something really interesting between the both of these guys. These guys can really mix it up in there. And just like you said, the hype, the press conference, and just like when you saw Fernando Vargas and Ricardo Mayorga when they had to put that big old plexiglass between them, I think that's what they're going to have to have some pretty deep security against this fight, because this fight, really, it's going to be, I mean, you're going to see some genuine hate between these two guys, some real venom.
They both coming off the losses to Timothy Bradley, you know. Kendall Holt, of course, he went the distance with Bradley, but, you know, I don't really mean that fight with Nate Campbell was stopped. It was very controversial. Everybody has their own opinion on how they think that went down. Some people say Nate quit, whatever the case may be. You put Campbell and Holt together, this gives both of them a chance to get their names back into the limelight.
It does. And they both got something to prove. And that's what makes this fight even more interesting, like you just mentioned right now. Both guys are coming off of a loss. Both guys lost to Timothy Bradley. Both guys want to prove that they're still in the line of becoming a champion. Both guys want to make sure that they don't have a loss, so they're not thrown in the back of the bus and all that, so they're not left behind when the other guy keeps moving and stuff. So it's a good, interesting matchup. Strikeheart, I don't know if he's on the line. What do you think about this match between these two ex-champions?
I'll try and keep it short. I drank all the tea in the world, so I could try and be on here.
Man, you've been drinking liquor, man. Don't even lie.
Trying to get a kickstart from my voice, see how it holds up. But just to correct you real quick, Nate Campbell didn't lose to Timothy Bradley. It was a no contest.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
But I mean, Kendall Holt was able to knock Timothy Bradley down twice in their fight. So I think definitely for Nate Campbell, this would be a big opportunity for him, should he be able to beat him a little bit more cleanly, to call for a rematch, which I'm pretty sure that he wants with Timothy Bradley. And like you guys were just saying, the matchup itself is great because they're both big talkers outside of the ring, and they bring an exciting game inside too. It's definitely a matchup that I'd be really disappointed to see if it doesn't come through. So I'm looking forward to it for sure, definitely.
I'm big time
I think the winner is still considered to be at the top of the division too, because you got to think they just lost to Timothy Bradley. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, there ain't no shame in their game losing to Timothy Bradley. He one hell of a fighter, though. He got his hands full in his next fight. He's still one hell of a fighter, undefeated young fighter, man.
Well, Nate Campbell too, he's not even really in the picture yet, because that was his fight with Timothy Bradley was like his first fight at light welterweight. So this is like his second chance to come in there and show that he deserves to be ranked in that division. I don't think he's cracked the ratings yet, so
real
it's
talk,
a big thing for him.
That's what's up. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. You know, in other news, you got you know, this Saturday on Halloween, Don Kane is still in actually a really good card, you know, the Halloween Thriller. You got Antonio DeMarco, the prospect, hard-hitting prospect, coming up. He's going to be facing an opponent on the undercard. But the main event's going to be Johnny Perez versus, you know, Arbeco, King Kong Arbeco. So if you don't got anything to do on Saturday night, that's the thing to do. If you're a hardcore fight fan, that's already set. You know what I mean? That's already set on the table. You know, as a real hardcore fight fan, we don't do anything. Forget trick-or-treating. The kids can, you know, just buy them a candy and throw it in their room and let them just, you know, trick-or-treat on their own and stuff. I won't even bother taking them out. I'm going to be sitting down having some cold ones ready for this fight. Speaking of cold ones, man, I think this is funny. I don't know if you guys heard about this, you know. Jesse Reakin, who's one of our PRs, okay, I thought this was hilarious. I just got to share this with you guys, man, and everybody else that listens to this show, okay. Speaking about drinking or whatever not, okay, Jesse Reakin, first off, is a character. This guy is funny. Great. He does a great job for us PRing for Leave It in the Ring. But he was at the fights last week, okay, and Machine Gun Rick tells me that Jesse Reakin was drinking, that he didn't have a laptop to print out the results of the fights that he was at. So he wanted them to call. Well, he wanted to call them over the phone and have them. He wanted to relay the results to them over the phone. I mean, is this dude a trooper or what, man? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're out there covering the fights, and you don't even take a laptop or nothing, and you're like, yo, I'm going to get them up no matter what. You know this dude was double-fisted, blood. You know what I'm saying? He's got to be double-fisted with brewskis in his hand to literally think, yo, I can get these guys to cover the sport for me while I have them on the phone while I'm still drinking. You know, Jesse Reakin, we got to change his name. You got to change the name from Jesse Reakin, you know. You know, he came from another place, you know, and came down to us, and, you know, just got to change the name. I just thought that was hilarious, you know. I'm just thinking.
We're going to find him.
Yeah,
you got to
find him something.
I got a name
exactly.
For him. Jesse
go
Drinkin.
For it. Yeah, you go.
Say that again. I hear that.
Jesse Drinkin.
Jesse Drinkin. That's it, man. Jesse Drinkin. There we go. You know what I mean? Because I just thought that was funny. You know what I mean, Chris? When you're thinking about that, you're like, he did what? He called who and wanted who to do what?
I haven't talked to Jesse a few times. I can't say I'm surprised.
You know, Jesse has his little moments, man. He'll call you in the middle of the night, drunk, you know, like, hey, what's up, man? But he does a great job, you know, and I know that the other spot that he was working for, you know, didn't like it. But, hey, this just shows he's a hardcore fight fan. That's how hardcore fight fans are, man. We act the fool, you know, and you know what? We made a home here with us, and we have no problem with that. It's funny.
Well,
I think
cool
it's great
over here because we like to get crunk, too. So, hey,
exactly.
you're in the right place with us.
You're in the right place with us, man. You know, and I just thought that was hilarious. So Jesse Drinkin, keep doing your thing, brother. Keep pounding and stuff, and keep giving us some good radio, brother. In other news, featherweight contender Israel Vasquez is planning to return in action in February or March of next year. After recovering a right eye injury, Vasquez returned after an 18-month layoff on October 10th to stop Angel Perleo. In 9 rounds, Vasquez appeared to struggle in somewhat many saw as an easy fight. He says his tune-up is not necessary. He doesn't think he needs another tune-up, guys. He thinks that, you know, that other fight he had with Angel was good enough for him to step in with a bigger star or a bigger challenge. And the challenge that they're thinking about at this moment is a fourth meeting with Rafael Marquez. I don't know. I think that really personally, having that problem with another guy but then the Angel, and he was really, and what I've read off and I've heard from the guys that cover the sport for us, you know, when they go to these events, they said he looked terrible. He was getting hit too much, you know, and stepping in with Rafael Marquez, which him too hasn't done anything in a serious comeback or tune-up fight himself. He did have one in Mexico, but it wasn't televised. It could be either a bad match for either one of them, where it could be a very lackluster because these two guys probably have left the shell themselves.
Well, Vasquez is confident, man. He's confident. He beat, you know, he won the last two fights between them two, man. So, you know, he's just feeling pretty good. And Marquez, he beat that guy. He beat some guy over in Mexico, you said, right? So, you
yeah,
know,
he did.
I mean, Mendoza or whatever his name is. I didn't see that fight, but I did read about it. So So, you know, I just think he just feels he could beat Marquez, man. You know what I'm saying at this stage? I think it's a good fight for Israel Vasquez, man.
I mean, but, you know, right, it is a good fight. I mean, it's a fan fight. It's a fight that everybody would want to see. I mean, you know, but it should have been a fight that maybe should have been rushed immediately after the third meeting. I don't know. David Chen, what do you think? A little too late now?
I don't think it's too late. I think you have no choice but to wait. The only problem is, in my personal opinion, I think Israel Vasquez took the worst beatings out of all those fights. And in terms of a fighter, I think he's more spent. You know, if you look at Rafael Marquez's last fight, he looked decent at 126. But, you know, Vasquez...
Yeah, but he ain't fight nobody, though.
Right, but I mean, you can say that, you know, about Angel, too. You know, no disrespect to Angel.
But he's coming off a win. But he's coming off the... He got the wins, bro.
Well, see, here's the thing, though, about Vasquez. After the last fight, you know, he's got his eye surgery and things like that. And things like that are very alarming, you know. I mean, he's not the same guy anymore. Even though he won the last two fights, he's not the same guy physically anymore. So is it even, you know, a good idea to put them again, you know, in the ring against each other and then have them go on with their careers after that to challenge these bigger guys at 126? You see what I mean? So, I mean, I like both fighters. That's why I'm kind of hesitant to see them in the ring against anybody at this point. Each other.
I think for Israel Vasquez, he doesn't have as much of a choice in the matter, because if he wants to make any kind of money, he's not the name that a Marquez brother is. That's just the facts. So, like, for him, I think he's going with the way he can make money more than anything else, and he knows that a fourth fight with Marquez is by far his biggest way to earn some money. So, I mean, it's an exciting fight. Nobody's not going to watch that. So I would say, just from that point of view, who else do you want to see Vasquez fight? Especially if you're not like us. If you're not a hardcore fight fan, who's the other guy he can fight? I don't see another guy.
Well, I was of the opinion that I thought Israel Vasquez should have just called it a day once he, you know, left for a year and then had the eye surgery. I thought, you know what, man, this is a good time to just, you know, lay it down, because, you know, you've been out of the gym for a year, you're recovering physically, you know what, you know, this might be a good time to move on, but apparently he doesn't want to do that.
Nah, you heard what how he was talking. Nah, he ain't with that. You know, he wants to continue to fight, so I think this would be a good place for him to start off, to see where he's at compared to, you know, how much he's lost and how much he's, I don't think he's gained much, but I think this would be a good fight for both fighters.
Do you think the hardcore fight fans will be able to, you know, be willing to see a fourth fight with them and just say, well, okay, you know, that's good enough. We don't need to ask any more out of Israel Vasquez? Or do you think the hardcore fight fans are going to ask him to keep fighting other guys, too, and try to, you know, do the pound-for-pound, you know, ladder climbing thing?
Hey, man, as a hardcore fight fan myself, I like to see him go ahead and fight Marquez and then see where he's at with that fight, and then see him fight some of the other guys in the division.
Yeah, if he was to beat Marquez again, that could only be good for his status. He for whatever reason, isn't as big of a star as he should be at this point. So,
well, when we had him on, you know, I think that in order for him to be as big as a star that he would want to be, he would have to fight, in my opinion, Juan Manuel Lopez.
Oh.
I mean, that's the gamble. You know what I'm saying? For him to take, those are the risks that I believe hardcore fight fans like myself want to see. You know, dare to be great. You take those risks. You know, and he doesn't have much time. His salmon in his bottle is emptying rapidly at this moment right now. So if I was him, I would put all the chips right there and just go for it. If he's willing
maybe
to go in with
Ruff, maybe one more tune-up before Lopez.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I believe. Make it one more tune-up before Lopez, but go after Lopez in this new year. Go after him in 2010, because, you know, you don't have much more time. Really, honestly, I think, I mean, three to me is good enough. Four is not going to do much. You know, I don't think it's going to be as explosive as the last three, because it took away a little bit of both of these men and stuff. You know, I think I'd rather see something different. I'd rather see something that is going to get me a little bit more excited. You know, it's going to get me more pumped up than to see him go again with Rafael Marquez. I don't want to see that. I want to see him get in with somebody dangerous, maybe a passing of the torch, you know. And that passing of the torch could be either to Gamboa or Lopez. Let's get in there with somebody of value, somebody that you haven't defeated yet because you beat Marquez already. Chris 916, what do you think?
Saying Vasquez at this point in his career going against Lopez is a gamble is like a blind man playing a game of dice, man. It's a gamble that I wouldn't want to take. Man, I don't know. I don't want to.
Well, you know what? But you know what, though? But, you know, I like what you just said right now. But a blind man can play dice because he could feel
man,
them dots on that cue.
Those dots are going to change by the time he gets his hands to him. Anyways, I don't want to see Marquez back at Vasquez 4. Sure, it might be a good fight, but like you said, what's it really going to prove at this point? The trilogy was good enough. I'm worried that both these guys are going to have, I mean, you know, some guys come out of the trilogy all right, like Barrera Morales, but I think these guys are going to be more like Castillo Corrales. They kind of just use themselves up in that trilogy. And I don't know what either has left. I didn't see Vasquez last fights, but I didn't hear anything positive coming out of it. I'm worried that the guy really doesn't have much left in the tank, and I don't know, man. If it happens, you know, good for them to get a payday. Hopefully no one to get serious hurt, but I don't think neither of them have any long-term career at this point left.
Absolutely, no. We're going to have another special Friday night edition of our Leave It in the Ring. It's going to be a little bit different, though. We're going to have two young ladies that have some bad blood between each other to get on there because they got a December fight coming up between Holly Holm and Melissa Hernandez, okay? This is a good matchup between two pound-for-pound women in the world. It's a matchup, really honestly, that I think a lot of people would probably find very interesting. We're going to have them both on to talk a little bit about the fight, talk about why we should watch this fight, and why should we even be interested in this fight. So tune in tomorrow. We're going to give it like a special edition for the ladies, you know, for the female boxing, tribute to them and show our appreciation because they do put in their work. They put in the work just like the men. They put in the dues just like the men. They sweat and bleed just like the men. So make sure you tune into that. You know, we have a lot of material, man, that we're trying to get out there as fast as we can. We're getting a lot of stuff. We just can't put it out as quick as we can. We're looking for more writers for us. So if you're interested in writing for the WillBeBloodFightShow.com and StandAndFight.com, hit us up. You know, we try to get back to everybody as promptly as we can, but we do got a lot of stuff. You know, last past week, you know, we had a Chris 916 who had a chance to interview Hector Camacho. He sent me the sound bites. We'll have that up for tomorrow's show. Also, Rob Riddler did his first press conference with Chad Dawson and Glenn Johnson. So I'll be able to put that up for you guys. Can hear how nervous Rob Riddler out of Puerto Rico was for the very first time. But he did a good job. Guys, he did a good job. He turned it up. He stepped to the plate. He dropped the ball and he ran with it, so it's a good thing. You know, there's a guy in boxing that now needs to take the little. I used to call Ricardo Mayorga the cockroach in boxing. For some reason, he just couldn't get rid of this guy. He couldn't kill him. This guy just keeps coming up over and over. But there's a new fighter in the world right now that somebody just can't seem to get rid of him. His name is John Ruiz. He's been added under the Hay and. What is that? How do you pronounce his last name? Valu? I don't know. Chris, how do you pronounce that?
That would be Valuev.
Under their card. So he makes a return back, you know, and he's trying to make his, trail back into the world heavyweight championship contenders. You know, it's a funny thing. I mean, this guy just doesn't go away. Everybody wants him to go away.
Somebody knocked out John Ruiz. One of the most boring fighters ever in the heavyweight division is John Ruiz. One of the seeds that stem the boring division, John Ruiz.
Absolutely, man. You know, other news, you know, like I said, we're going to have Andre the Merchant Durala come on and talk to us a little bit about the Frotch fight and his upcoming fight that he's going to be in Madison Square Garden to face Arthur Abraham, the dangerous king Arthur Abraham, who had a spectacular knockout over Jermaine Taylor. But if you haven't checked out Andre Bortles, Twitter. You got to go over there and check it out because this guy Twitters, like, consistently. This guy just, I don't know if he has it in front of his phone. You know, he's got to be doing it all the time. But there's been some trash talking between him and Sugar Shane Mosley. Andre Bortles pretty much calling out Shane. I guess he got fed up with Shane's last interview that was on TalkBoxing.com, I believe it was. And, you know, he said, hey, Shane, you know, sign the contract. Enough talk. You know, you've been talking too much. Sign the contract. Let's make this happen. You know, I want to get Andre Berto on, so we'll make some calls. Next week, we got a great show coming up. We're always putting our work in for everybody that listens to Leaving the Ring. Hey, Dave Chen, we got any callers, man, any boxing fans that want to call in, maybe chop it up a little bit of what we were talking about, or maybe add some other news that is happening in the boxing world?
Well, we have our friend Rob Riddler from Puerto Rico on right now with us, brother.
Hey, everybody.
What's going on?
I heard you was nervous, bro. I heard you was shook.
Yeah, I was nervous. I get jittery with fighters.
You can't get like that when you just don't get like that when you get in the ring, man.
Oh no, actually, I get really nervous. Like I try to shake it off, but I get really nervous when I'm going sparring alone.
Hey, you know, when he got on the telepress conference, okay, and they said his name, you know, representing Leader of the Ring, Rob Riddler, his voice changed. He was like, hi, how's that doing?
Oh, bullshit.
Hey, you got to put
bullshit.
That up, bro. You got to put that one up.
Bullshit, whatever. I'll find that. I'll find those sound bites and I'll edit them. I'll make my voice deeper.
I was like, is this dude letting him questions? Because, you know, how are you going to be eating? How are you going to be
eating? Oh, no. Whatever.
You the man, Riddle. You the man. You know we play. You know we play Holly. We got mad respect in that.
You did a great...
My piss is affecting my voice. The piss is affecting my vocal.
Oh man, no. He did a fantastic job, you know. I'll put it up. You guys can check it out. Rob really did his first telepress conference again with Chad Dawson and Glenn Johnson. Hey, man, it was a good job what you did. It's only going to get better and better. It's always uncomfortable when you do it for the very first time because you really don't know what you're facing. Chris, as David Strike, they'll all let you know. You really don't know what's going to happen until you start getting in the mix, and it just becomes easier and easier. Dave Chen, any other boxing news that are happening around the world that we all should know about at this moment?
Well, you were talking about Andre Durrell and the King, Arthur Abraham, and their fight is signed on to be in New York City, Madison Square Garden, on January 23rd of next year, and that's going to be kind of interesting. Arthur Abraham coming here for a change. You know, maybe it's time for Durrell to win a decision.
Let me ask you this. You think it's a little fair for Andre Durrell? I mean, he's got to travel, man, a lot more than a lot of these other guys. He's went all the way to Nottingham, England. Now he's got to go all the way to New York. I mean, shouldn't they have made it a little bit closer to his hometown rather than making this young man travel all over the place, Blunt?
Hell yeah. They need to even it up. You know, give him a fight in his backyard, too, where he can have some of his home people come out and cheer him on, because believe it or not, we all know that that's a big advantage for a fighter right there. And when Arthur Abraham fights in his backyard, that's a good, it's an advantage for him, so everybody deserves to have that advantage here and there and there. That's just the way I see it.
Who do you think has the upper hand being at the Madison Square Garden, Chris? You think it's going to be Arthur Abraham, or does Andre Durrell, being on his own soil in the United States, does he have the heavier leverage of fans that are going to be rooting for him at Madison Square Garden?
Man, I don't know about that. It depends, because, you know, New York's a very diverse city as far as population-wise and stuff, so Abraham might bring out more his crowd. Plus, it's a pretty knowledgeable boxing area, you know, Madison Square Garden and stuff. Oh, man, I don't know. Abraham hasn't fought a lot in the States, but he's fought a lot more often on the big stage. Durrell, I don't know. I can't say he responded very well, you know, in his first fight on the main stage, even though it was overseas. So I just think there's a little more pressure still on Andre Durrell because Abraham's, you know, still, even if, you know, I mean, he hasn't beaten the most big names yet, but he's still a more proven commodity. So I still say there's more pressure on Durrell. He still hasn't won the title yet where Abraham has. And he's the champ, but we'll see.
The sad thing is Durrell should have the advantage because he's from America. So, you know, he should have the advantage, but we know that's not how it go, though.
No, it does, you know, because either way, Americans fall in love with punchers, and Arthur Abraham obviously is a puncher. You know, you know what? Let me tell you this about that. Now, I'm going back to the Chad Dawson and Glenn Johnson teleconference blood, and they said something a little interesting, something that really caught my ear. Didn't have time to do the soundbite for it, but I will post it up for tomorrow's show, and then we can discuss it. But they mentioned, I guess there's been some talk about, you know, Jermaine Taylor being pulled out. You know, I guess somebody's got a little bit of a heart, being Lou DiBella, you know, seeing this kid more than just a meal ticket of making him cash money all the time, having some sympathy about there's a possibility this guy can, you know, walk away with the sport with all his bearings. They're talking about possibility filling in his spot with Chad Dawson if he gets past Glenn Johnson. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, man, that would make the tournament so much more interesting, man, because Chad Dawson is naturally bigger than all them guys. So, man, and you know what? Somebody sent me an article, too, that said that Jermaine Taylor was pulling out, but I don't know how valid these articles be, man. But somebody sent me an article on it. But that would be interesting. Chad Dawson is a super middleweight. I don't know if that's like taking a step back or not, man, because, you know, he's really a light heavyweight. I don't know. What do y'all think about that?
He'd be the favorite. Then I would say he'd be the favorite.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
He's just way too fast. He's way too fast, way too big, and he'd have a lot more power. His chin really isn't suspect. His skills are by far would surpass anybody in that tournament, I think. He'd just probably handle everybody in there.
As long as he can make the weight, it can't be anything but good for him.
Yeah, because he's just big.
Yeah. I don't know if that will take too much out of him going down a little bit like that. But it's definitely a good idea for him if he thinks he can pull it off and if they can come up with a way for that to work out with this whole point system they have set up, how they're going to deal him in, because Jermaine Taylor came up with a goose egg. So I don't know if they're going to give him honorary points or what. That'd be the question.
You know, that would be the question. I think what we need to do is get Lou DiBella on the line to ask him, how would this work if Jermaine Taylor was pulled out of this tournament? Also, having Chad Dawson, I don't know, man, it's a little iffy, but I think, in my opinion, for Chad Dawson, it's, you know, he's a natural 175-pound heavyweight guy.
Hold that thought, Dave, real quick, because Red just hit me up, and he's saying that he's got Andre Durrell with him on the line right now. Red, are you there, man?
Yeah, buddy, we're here. Mr. Durrell, please go ahead.
How y'all doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm hanging
well, good, man. Let's just get right to it. The Foch, honestly, you know, you proved you belong in this tournament. A lot of hardcore fight fans believe you won that fight. But then you got some of your fight fans that said, you ran a lot in that fight. What do you think, man? Do you think you ran a lot? Have you had a chance to watch that fight?
Yes, I watched it numerous times, you know, and yes, I've had, I proved a lot of critics wrong. I proved I belong in this tournament. And, you know, first of all, I would just like to thank God, you know, for giving me this opportunity and letting the world see my true ability. And to answer the question about do I think I ran a lot, well, if you watch the Curtis Stevens fight, you watch this fight, you can be the deciding factor of that. Everyone knows I use ring generalship, I box, and I did what was necessary to pull off the victory in the fight. Unfortunately, I didn't get the decision. But like I said, I was happy with my performance. You know, my fans, a lot of the critics, and a lot of my family and my hometown is keeping me up and giving me high hopes, so I still feel confident in the tournament. You know, I'm working hard to this very second. I'm sweating right now. Y'all calling me in the gym. I feel great, man. You know, I feel 100%. You know.
Well, let me tell you what I think about that fight, okay, because I called the fight where you winning. I thought that you were going to give him a boxing lesson. That's pretty much what I saw. I thought you were going to use your legs, your speed, you're going to use your jab, you're going to stick that jab in there. Pretty much how I saw it, you pretty much did it. Now, being that it was in Nottingham, okay, and being that Foch, and you know what, I want to replay what Foch said, and I want you to tell me your thoughts about what he said about you, okay? Dave Chen, go ahead and do the replay of what Foch says about the fight.
Carl, your reaction. Did you feel as though you won this fight?
Yeah, definitely felt I won the fight from round one through to round 12. I got hit with a couple of shots, rushing in when I went wide with a few shots. I walked into a very, very fast left counterpunch. Let's not forget Andre Durrell. He's a very fast, very quick hands, got a good range, and he's a great fighter. Now, if you put speed and timing and accuracy together with negativity, which is what I was tonight, negativity, then you can survive against anybody. He didn't want to stand and fight. The minute I got close quarters and tried to rough him up, make a fight of it, the fight which I want to be involved in, he either jumped on the floor, got shoved on the floor, complained to the referee, held on, every excuse in the book, really. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? If he's not going to stand and fight like a man, like a warrior, then all I can do is take what's there. I took what's there, and I'm still champion. So I'm happy that was a comfortable night for me. I'm really, really... I've got no aches and pains. I'm not damaged. I think I walked onto one or two shots. I can't believe it was a split decision. But there you go. That was 1 point by the Mexican judge.
You can't believe that it's a split decision. Then would you be able to understand in any way how he feels that he got a hometown decision and that the only reason that you won is because we're here in Nottingham?
No, that's nonsense. That's nonsense. He's got to come back with something. He's got to come back with something. But, you know, he's a proud fighter, and if he wants to make an excuse, then he can make an excuse. But all the fans tonight will probably agree with me that not just because
of
hometown fans.
Of course they will. They're here. They're for you. This is your town.
Not just hometown fans. My fans come to see a fight. They know what I'm capable of. They know what I can do. And I wasn't able to show what I can do tonight because the minute I stood close quarters and tried to have a trade-off, he leaned right back and ran. And at times jumped on the floor. I didn't even really manhandle him like I could because the referee was on my case. It was a dissatisfying night for me, but a comfortable enough night. I'm still a champion, and I picked up 2 points in a fabulous Super 6 tournament. So, you know, there's pluses and negatives to come from that fight.
Did you feel as though you should have been awarded one of those points for fouling when, in many instances, could have been the opposite?
It could have gone either way. I don't know if you saw the low blow that Jermaine Taylor suffered tonight. That was a point decision, a point deducted. It's down to the referee. Andre Durrell was holding non-stop. If he's going to duck low, I'm going to hit him on the back of the head because he's there to be hit. That's fighting, that's boxing. If he's going to give me the side of his head, I'm going to take it. Not illegally, but because he's ducking low, it's the only thing you can take. So what am I supposed to do? Stand there and wait for him to come up? If he comes up with a great left hook, can he come up with one of them? You know, so I've got to be careful in there. I'm in there to win the fight, and winning is what I did tonight. I'm not 100% satisfied because I like to feel like I've been in a fight, and I feel like I could go back in there and do another 12 rounds of Andre Durrell and beat him again.
Durrell, is there anything in there that he says, man, that really surprises you? I mean, there's a couple of things I could pick out of it that surprises me, that what he says, but after you hearing him say all this stuff, like, pretty much, I'm still the champion, I won, this was a clear-cut win for me, do you think that he really believes that?
Not at all. I mean, he contradicted himself so much in that interview. He would say, the minute he would try to get in there and bang with me, I would get out of there. I was boxing his head off the whole time. In other words, he took what was there, which is headshots. It's not illegal if I'm ducking, so he can rabbit punch me on top of the head. Period, point blank, he said it like it is. He took what was there. That was the back of the head. He couldn't hit me, period, the whole fight. I boxed his head off. He said it. I didn't give him no opportunity to stand there and bang with him. You know, I boxed just like a boxer was supposed to do. It's always something I could have done more. You all can see more than you could have done. But he's just building a comfort level for himself. Like he said, he's happy he got his championship. That's all he can say. I can stand 2 inches from that man's face right now and ask him, how did he win that fight? Break it down to me. I guarantee you, as much as I made in that fight, I will give you all of that if he can break down a logic explanation to winning that fight. That's all he can say. He roughhouses me. He manhandled me. Okay, you manhandled me. You slammed me. You roughhouses me. You hit me in the back of the head. You didn't follow the rest of the record. You hit me after the bell. And yeah, you know what I'm saying? It was hometown decision. You know what I'm saying? So it's funny. It's joking. You know what I'm saying? I really can't. I ain't getting nothing out of that. You know what I'm saying? He told it for himself. He took what was there. He couldn't handle me. Period, point blank. And if we ever get in the ring again, this is my solid vow. I guarantee you I will stop him. That's a guarantee.
Let me ask you this. You know, seeing that you've already been in there with Frotch and feeling this guy's power, feeling what his abilities. In the fight, I saw a face of distress. I saw him a little confused with you. I saw him kind of wondering, like, oh, shit, I'm in a real fight. If you have a chance, you think, if you, I mean, let me go back on that. Let me rephrase that. Do you think this guy would want to get back in the ring with you?
What, did I what again? Say it again?
Do you think Frotch would want to, in Heart of Hearts, do you think Frotch would want to get back in the ring with you?
Hey, hell no. Under no circumstances, man. If he had to, he would. You know what I'm saying? But no, he's not going to take that opportunity. He's not going to take that chance if he doesn't have to. Period, point blank. I go to his hometown again, call him out. He won't take the fight. That's a guarantee. He'll never take that fight if he didn't have to. Period. And I'm going to tell you this. I've read comments and about people who say I fought the wrong fight and could have done more. And yes, that's true. That's and me knowing that, stepping into the ring with him again, and me knowing his style and knowing what he can do and what he got, he wouldn't take that chance. Period, point blank. He wouldn't take it.
What was the hardest part about that match, Darrell? What was the hardest thing you had to do in that fight?
Well, it was really missing. I had to know I could go that 12 rounds, so I didn't put out as much as I could have. But he was lightweight awkward. He was staff. He would put his hand out there when I come in. You know, I don't get that a lot. You know, not even inspiring. But he just had funny ways of getting out of there, like awkward style. He just had funny ways of, you know, a boxing period. You know, it wasn't nothing really hard about his style. You know, it was just trying to deal with the mental issue of him roughhousing me and trying to keep my composure and box. You know, that was the hardest part.
You stun him late in the round. You end up stunning him. You know, is that one of the things that you look back at and say, damn, I should have finished him. I should have finished him.
I mean, I had, what, 7-8 punches to throw after I stunned him? And I know if it would have been all hooks to the head, he would at least got an 8 count that round. You know, because the bell rung shortly after. I blocked it with the left. I blocked his right hook with the left. Came with a chopping left and then chopped again. And he went back and I studded into the ropes. And I threw, I think, 2 or 3 punches and threw an uppercut and got tangled up again. But I was focused on not letting him hit me in the inside. But if I would have just let my hands go, you know, in the inside, get the punches in and get out, then he would have hated me in the inside. He would have hated me in the out. So it could have been a big difference that night. But like I said, if it comes about again, I guarantee you will see that difference.
Let's talk about another American that was on the same night on the card with you and Frotch, which is Jermaine Taylor. Gets knocked out by Arthur Abraham, King Arthur Abraham, who's a guy that you're going to be facing in Madison Square Garden. Have you had the chance to watch that fight?
Yes, I did. I actually watched it with the coach probably about 3 or 4 days ago.
What's your assessment about Arthur Abraham? What's your honest opinion about him?
He's a tough fighter. He has great defense only when he's not punching. Hear me when I say this. His defense is horrible when he doesn't punch. I mean, when he punches, he's wide open when he punches. He knows when to let him go. He really won't punch unless he knows he can hit you. He'll come up through the body with a beret of punches and come back up to the head, but he looks for that opportunity while he's blocking. You have to be very careful with him. He looks for that opportunity while he's blocking, and he won't throw unless he can land because he's so flat-footed. But if you can stand there, if you can honestly box him and give him combinations the whole fight and keep your composure, that could be an easy night. That can be an easy night. If I fight like I fought Frotch, it's going to be a hard night. You know, I watch every fight and I learn from it. But he's a careful fighter. You know, but his defense is great. He allows you to punch yourself out. If you get tired, he takes you out in the later rounds. But he gives you 6-7 rounds to your advantage, and you can't sleep on the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th round. You have to keep that composure. You kept the first round all the way to the last, but you can, if you can box him for a solid 12 rounds and don't give him no opportunity to land, then you can pull the fight off.
If you're tuning in right now, leaving the ring, we got Andre the Matrix Darrell. He's talking about the Frotch right now. We're talking about Arthur Abraham. You know, Darrell, let me ask you this, okay? Because, you know, obviously, when I watched that fight, at some moments in that fight, I seen him kind of mocking the American style of Jermaine Taylor. He was, like, playing with him. He didn't take him out when he could have done it. He decided to wait on it and just kind of play with his food. Now, does that bother you in any sense, seeing that this guy came and pretty much shut out an American, not even an American, African-American?
You talking Arthur Abraham or Fox?
Yeah. Well, Arthur Abraham did it to Jermaine Taylor.
Oh, well, on the positive side, you know, we all know Jermaine is at the end of his rope. Let's get that out there right now. Everybody knows Jermaine is at the end of his rope, and this was his last pull, you know. And what I seen when he got in there, you know, he's Jermaine Taylor. He can box, but he can only box for so long. He's not a full fledged boxer, you know. And I can box for a full 12 rounds. And he's a little flat footed, which allowed Arthur Abraham to get off most of the punts that he did in the later rounds. But if everybody pays attention to that. Jermaine Taylor was full of energy all the way up until he got knocked out. He had his hands up and the straight right got right through the glove. He was full of energy. So that's a plus sign for me. You know, I'm going to come in tip top shape. Like I said, I'm in the gym right now. You know, and I focus on my game plan and I'm more motivated now than ever. You know, I've always said that in this tournament the whole time, the most dangerous ones would be the ones who took that L first. You know, so I look at it, you know, Frost stopped Jermaine Taylor with, 24 seconds left in the fight, but Jermaine was supposed to win, and I pretty much feel I dominated Frost. And Arthur Abraham pulled off a unanimous decision against him. I mean, well, it would have been if he wouldn't have got knocked out. You know, like I said, he has great power, so you just pretty much have to watch out for Arthur Abraham's power in boxing and use your ring generalship.
You know, but I saw you do something with Carl Froch. This is a trick of the trade of the American way, which is you got in his head. Is that something you feel you're going to have to do with Arthur Abraham? You're going to have to get in this man's head?
Yeah, that's more important than anything. Even if you're in Arthur Abraham's head, though, he won't let you know it. He keeps the same face through the whole fight. You know, his face looks the same. He just carries himself from the same way from Bell 1 to Bell 12, but if you're hitting the man after six rounds of getting hit, you know, letting the guy wear himself out, somewhere down the line you're gonna have to start taking chances. He knows he's gonna have to start taking chances with me. That's what I'm looking for him to start to let him know that I'm not gonna be there for him to hit and have him start taking chances and actually feed off that. And that's definitely going to get in his head, seeing he can't hit me after 8 or 9 rounds. After 8 rounds, he's really gonna have to start taking chances. I have to put in his head that he can't. I can't let him touch me for at least the first 8 rounds to get in his head to make him start breaking.
You know, I always say that the will and determination is what makes a man even more dangerous, and I saw that. And one of the reasons why I kind of picked that you were gonna win this fight with Froch was I saw something about you at the Staples Center. I don't know if you remember me. I was walking next to you, and that girl was laying down, and she put the bush between her legs. Do you remember that?
And she put the what between her legs?
Remember, she was laying down, and she was sitting in between these bushes. She had the bush right between her legs. And I said, now that's what you call a bush.
No, I don't remember that, man. That was for that press conference we was all at.
That's when we were leaving the Staples Center, right after the Klitschko and Oriello fight. It was immediately right after.
Shit. I mean, I saw so many people that night. But damn, I almost got what you're talking about, but I can't pinpoint it, so I can't remember. But damn, that's crazy.
Well, you know, the reason why I was saying that is because I noticed, you know, there's got to be a certain hunger. I mean, you got to be a little ticked off. You're an American fighter, and people were walking by you literally not knowing who you were. Is that where the drive is coming from?
Yeah, to want to be known, to want to be a superstar. Of course, you know, like I said, me and Andre Ward, we're the two least favorites to win it, you know. You know, Frost was the favorite, you know, so that was my name. And I knew that would have been a time for me to make a marquee name for myself, you know. But I really feed off that. I really do feed off that. I love being an underdog because I know my skill. You saw it. You know, you saw it on the 17th. I know my skill. You know, I know what I can do. So I know in due time the world will see it. as long as I put in that hard work and keep that will, keep that drive, and keep that hunger. You know, so I actually feed off that, I believe toward the end of my career, I will actually reminisce, you know, about not being known. You know, it's honestly a great feeling when you know your ability.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Blood, and ask the questions to Andre the Matrix, Darrell, brother.
Hey, what's up, Darrell? Hey, first of all, I just want to say, man, I thought you won that fight hands down.
Thank
pretty,
you. Thank you,
pretty comfortable decision. But I just wanted to say, man, to those people out there that say that you run a lot, and do these people just forget the concept called stick and move? And do you really care about what people say, especially those who are not really hardcore boxing fans who don't understand the sweet science? What do you say when people say this guy just runs, he don't deserve to get the decision? What goes through your mind, man?
They're stuck. I mean, chances are most of them seem to curse Steven fight, period, point blank. But yeah, they're not hardcore boxing fans. And if this is something you do, this is something you love, this is something you plan on making a career out of, then there is no way in hell you should let anyone, especially a boxing, just a guy who watches boxing, be able to get in your head. Like I said, headed to the Carl Frost fight, I knew I was going to hear the crowd. I knew they was going to boo. And I kept them quiet, you know, might add, you know. But I knew they were going to boo. I knew I was going to get rough house. The whole week I was getting tormented. But I already knew I had a strong mental game coming from amateur, coming from the Olympics and, you know, another international tournament. So, you know, you learn as you grow, you know, and this is something I do. This is on my list for. This is what feeds my kids. I can't by no means let a simple fan or a critic get inside of my head, you know. So it doesn't bother me at all. I think it's beautiful because you're going to have your haters, you know. I think because I have so many people on my side now, you know, after this fight, you know, I'm fully confident and that's all I need. I have the will. You know, I have the power and I have the ability. So, you know, I'm feeding up all the positive and I'm laughing at the negative and I'm having fun while I'm doing it.
Hey, man, it gets to the point, man, to where you're becoming like another road warrior, man. I mean, you're taking a lot of fights away from home, man. Who has the – first of all, man, I mean, you have to have a strong mental game to do that. But when you go and fight in New York, who do you think is going to be the fan favorite when you go to New York between you and Abraham?
Well, it didn't happen in Connecticut, but that's where the Curtis Stevens situation happened. But, you know, I've been in New York numerous times after that fight, and I did have my share of fans. So I believe I will be the favorite, seeing what happened to me in Frotch. But if not, oh well, I'll move on. I'll still fight hard. But I believe I will be the favorite. You know, I'm sure they're pulling for America to win this thing, and I'm sure the fans seen all the fans at the fight that's going to be at the Arthur Abraham Andre Darrell fight, seeing the Andre Darrell Carl Frotch fight. So I believe that, you know, I'll have the upper hand as far as the fans going in that fight.
Hey, man, real talk, though. Should Jermaine Taylor leave out this tournament, man? Or you think he should go ahead and finish this thing out?
Real talk?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he should go ahead and hang his gloves up. You know, I've talked to Jermaine Taylor on Twitter a couple of times, and I've had the opportunity to congratulate him on all his success in the photo shoot. And, you know, we share nothing but love. You know, I always knew what kind of fighter he was. Like I said, I envy fighters who have that dog mentality, you know, outside the ring. I'm a nice guy. You know, I get along with everybody. I'm very social. You know, I don't have that boxing spirit outside of the ring. Only in the gym. Don't get it twisted now. You know, I can metamorphosis in a minute, you know. But sometimes, you know, that dog mentality just isn't enough. You know, he has to look at the health issue now. He has to look at long term. And I believe that it would be best for him to hang it up, man. He has two beautiful daughters, man, that he has to look after. I would love to see him get back in the ring knowing the kind of fight he has in him. But at the same time, it's not worth it, man. You have a whole life ahead of you. He's young, and I want to see him raise them kids and live his life fully.
I heard that, bro. Who's going to win the fight between Kessler Ward? Who you got, man?
I got Ward. You know, same situation. Honestly, But, okay, no, not the same situation. Sorry about that. But I just believe, I know how quick, I've sparred Andre Ward in amateur numerous times. I know how quick that man's feet is on top of his hand speed and his sneaky punches. He has sneaky punches, and he has his ways around the ring. Now, if he comes with his A-game, he will pull off the fight. I believe he can pull it off. But if he comes lacking and not in full focus, then he can easily lose. Kessler's has great experience. He's been in there 40-something times in the ring. That's unheard of. And, you know, he's a fighter. You know, so you have to be careful with a guy like Kessler. He's coming to fight. He's coming to box. He can do it all. But I believe Andre Ward can do it as well, and he's young. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that fight, and I'm looking forward to him shining that night.
I hear that, bro. I'm going to pass it on to my co-host, Strike Hard.
It was good talking to you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. Andre Durrell, I would like to get to in a little bit more with that Curtis Stevens situation, since you brought it up a couple times. I actually talked with his trainer, Andre Roger, a couple weeks before your fight. So, of course, I asked him – yeah, of course I asked him what he thought about your fight with Carl Froch. And he told me that if you were to do the stick-and-move dance, is how he put it, that they would take the decision away from you. He picked you to win, but he thought you were going to win by knockout. Having said that, what is your comment on – your performance exactly? What would you have done different? If you could do that fight again, exactly what would you do different than what you did?
Well, I wouldn't have leaned on him as much. I wouldn't have clinched as much. Frost is a wide fighter, even in the inside. I had plenty of times to shine in the inside. I didn't take the opportunity. You know, I just clinched him up because I was focused on boxing him from the outside. So when I got him inside, you know, I clinched. Just like the Curtis Stevens fight, I didn't fight no good fighter that was as short as Curtis Stevens. Period. Let's put this out there. I didn't fight no good fighter that was as short as Curtis Stevens, so I went back to my amateur roots purposely. I didn't do that accidentally. That wasn't my style. That wasn't my professional style. Of course, you guys seen that by now. But I thought strategic, you know, and it got me by. And in this situation, I thought all outside game was going to handle this man. I watched the fight. I can handle him just as easily on the inside, keep him short and sweet. Like I said, if you watch the fight over, you can always see stuff he did differently. That's why I know for a fact I would stop him if we fought again. Clinching so much and not taking the great opportunity that was right there in front of me when it was in the inside.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I was actually one of your skeptics coming into the fight, to be perfectly honest with you, and you completely changed my mind about who you are as a fighter. But having said that, I did score the fight basically a draw, more because of what you didn't do, and you kind of commented on it right there, than what you did do. And since I had scored it 6-6 and they took a point away from you, I ended up scoring it one point for Froch. Now, let's get into that a little bit. That point was taken away from you, yet you talked a little bit about it with the rabbit punching. Do you feel like it was fair for them to take a point away from you for holding when you were being fouled as well?
Well, his mind was set on what he wanted to do from the gate. When Frost was hitting me after he said break, when Frost slammed me, so on and so forth. So his mind was already set on me, what I was doing, period. He wanted to see a fight. This is what his fans wanted to see a fight, obviously. But because when he took that point, if you watch, there was no effort in me holding, or there was no effort in him trying to get away from a clinch on that break. I simply walked him back to the ropes with my hands on the outside of his. You can watch that a million times and see me clearly walking him back, us rarely having any effort in clinching or holding, or, you know, vice versa. His mind was set on taking a point, period. And we all saw that he could have took plenty of points from Frotch, you know, but he wanted to see a fight that night, too. Obviously, I didn't agree, you know. At the same time, like, because I did hold so much, I would have agreed if he would have took a point from Froch. But I'm not one to argue. Boxing is a beautiful sport. It takes skill to be in this sport. Just like the Olympics when I got robbed, I was just more happy being in that situation. It's a beautiful thing to be able to get up every morning, hurt yourself, to watch yourself grow and be successful as a man in this very, very tough sport. So I'm always
I'm always grateful and blessed to be in situations like that, you know. So I don't like, I don't want to take the glare from boxing by complaining. That's not me, you know. But I let the fans decide, and I let the critics decide. I just get in there and for the best of my ability.
Something that I think all the fans are a little bit concerned about, not me so much, but on the whole, I think a lot of people think you got robbed in that fight. And I know there was a lot of conversations between all the promoters to get this thing going. What exactly do you know if there was anything done behind the scenes to make sure everything was fair and square, especially in situations like yours when you're going right into Carl Froch's backyard? And do you think if there wasn't anything done, was it successful?
Well, worst case scenario, even with that point taken, let's get serious. This man only won 3 rounds, 4 rounds tops. So I just want to put that out there because you got Froch winning that fight, which is, you know, kind of big. Okay, worst case scenario, you could have given it a draw, and you did that. But because of the point you say he won by 1 point, nah, I don't see that. I don't see that. But I don't know. You know, I don't know what they went through or who they know or the kind of pull that they have or what they went through as far as the promoters go. I just know the ability and the hunger and the drive that I had coming into this. And like I said, I would do anything for that WBC belt. So if going to Froch's backyard to get it was necessary, then I took the precautions and I stepped in his backyard and I felt I did my job. But I'm not going to ask.
Let me move on to the Abraham fight real quick. I know we've talked a little bit about it already, but one thing that sticks out in my mind right away is Abraham is a guy who makes a big, big entrance. What are you going to do to – you got fireworks stockpiled? What are you going to do to make a bigger entrance than Arthur Abraham?
Man, that is gonna be something, ain't it? I paid attention to that with Jermaine's fight, but let me say, man, that outfit was horrible, man. The colors, that thing looked like some Tina Turner get up, man. I ain't digging it, you know what I'm saying? But I ain't looking at this. I think I'ma just come in with a serious face this time and let everybody know how serious I am. But, you know, I just won't pay no attention
Don't disappoint us, brother.
I'm working hard.
What exactly, this is my last question for you before I pass it on to another guy. Especially my voice is holding up pretty well. I have a bad cold. I'm surprised I've been doing this well. But what exactly are you going to do as far as strategy? I know you don't want to get into all of it, but Carl Froch and Arthur Abraham are about as polar opposite as you can get as far as the way they fight. So what are you going to do in this fight to win?
So I'm just saying this. Stay disciplined for 12 rounds. Look forward to 12 rounds and stay in disciplined for 12 rounds. You can figure it out from there.
Okay, because, I mean, what I saw with Jermaine Taylor is that he continued to jab away at Arthur Abraham's guard, and it wasn't really working for him, but he never really did anything else. He just continued to try and jab his way in and didn't get
anywhere. What's going to work with a guy who has a turtle shell? What's going to work with him? You know, I've seen that as a good thing as long as he doesn't get hit, you know, when Arthur Abraham comes back, you know. But, you know, what does work with a guy who blocks, you know, who has a great, great defense, you know, so I'm just looking forward to getting there and punching, you know, and hit and not get hit. That's my whole game plan.
All right. Well, it was great talking to you, and I hope that you have the success that I think now I can say I think you deserve. So, pleasure to see you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yo, what's up, Andre?
Hey.
First off, hello?
Yeah.
Oh, anyways. Man, first I got to say that Tina Turner comment, man. I was trying to recall what Abraham's outfit looked like, and you're right. It's a Mad Max Beyond Thundertone thing going on there.
Yeah, tell me about it.
But anyways, man, I got to be honest also. You know, I picked Froch going into the fight, but I thought you won the decision. I thought you got, the bad end by them judges. But I got to give you credit, man. You manned up in the post-fight press conference or interview. You know, you didn't complain and cry like a bunch of like a lot of fighters would, you know, rightfully so. You know, you definitely had a reason to have a complaint, but you manned up, so I got to give you credit for that. But what do you say to those people out there? Because I've been arguing with a lot of people back and forth that said, you need to take the title from the champion, and you didn't do that. What do you got to say about that?
Well, there isn't too much to say about it. I got to come back with a better performance, and that's what I plan on doing. But that right there is just a hater. You know, he saw what I did that night. They saw what I did that night. If they say I was supposed to take the belt from the champion, I didn't, and they saw the performance, then metaphorically, I took the belt from that fighter. Period. You know, so that's just an opinion. That's how they feel. That's more than likely a brawler and an MMA fan.
Right. Did you or Jermaine or Andre, did any of you guys talk about before the tournament even started or even with your management or team about the possibility of getting, like, bad decisions or anything going overseas and if that, you know, if you thought that might be a problem in this tournament?
Yeah. I've always said that. I always was skeptical of that. But I didn't think it was going to be a big issue. You know, my whole thing, I told, before this tournament even brought up, I wanted Frotch. I begged for the fight, literally. This is not something that's posted on YouTube, me just saying something when y'all seen it. I really begged for that fight. I said, I don't care where it's at. I want it. You know, hometown doesn't mean anything to me. If you know you have the skill to pull it off, then why should you have to worry, you know? So, basically, I didn't pay too much attention to it because I didn't want that in my mind. I wanted to make sure I was doing what I was doing in camp and working hard and getting there and doing my job. And there's a lot more I could have done, and I guarantee you, you're going to see a bigger improvement and a better punch output for the rest of these fights from Andre Durrell.
Right. Something I haven't really heard you talk about or I haven't heard anyone mention, the week of the fight, you know, I heard Fraud say you look kind of gaunt and you had to weigh in twice. Is the weight going to be a problem for you, or was it just kind of fighting overseas, or how's that coming along for you?
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody brought that up to me yet. This is the first time, actually. But let me get this out the window. I went to camp, didn't put on that bag one time. I lost the weight very slowly in an 8-week camp. Before I left, I was 2 pounds overweight. Got in the Nottingham, and 2 days leading to the fight, I made the weight. So I'm like, okay, I ain't got to do too much now. So I went to the gym, worked out a little bit. The day before the weigh-in, I didn't do nothing, and the day after, I didn't do nothing. I was on weight on my scale, actually, but I just didn't, I didn't get on their scale to check, you know. So it wasn't nothing like that. I felt wonderful. I can make the weight easy all the time. I'm walking around at 176 right now. You know, that was another thing he was just trying to comfort himself on. But I feel great, man. You know, my weight is not a problem at all. It was just a misunderstanding.
All right. You said you think that maybe Jermaine Taylor should step aside. If he was to step aside in this thing, who do you think should come in for him? Miranda, you know, Alan Green, word is, you know, possibly Chad Dawson even. Who do you think should take that slot if Jermaine bows out?
Well, all of them are top fighters, and all of them will make this tournament, you know, as big as it is right now, or maybe even bigger. You know, Alan Green, he's been begging to get in this tournament. I've been hearing about him saying how mad he was about not getting in this tournament the most. He definitely has the skill to be in this tournament. Edison Miranda, well, his power speaks for itself. He's one of the strongest guys in the game right now. And Chad Dawson, wow, you know, coming down, I mean, another world champion, coming down from light heavyweight, you know what I'm saying? This thing's a blow, man. This thing's a blow, so it would be beautiful. You know, any one of them be a great exception.
All right. My last question real quick is, not who do you think, but when it comes down to the finals, obviously you see yourself in it. Who do you want across that ring from you when you get to the finals?
I want the toughest. I want the biggest name by the end of the tournament. I want the one who worked the hardest, whoever that may be. I just want it to be two warriors in the ring that night, and I want the fans to be skeptical who's going to win that night, because I know I'll be at my top level, and I know that guy will be at his top level. That way, when I win, there will be no excuses, and I will emerge a superstar from that.
All right, man. Sounds good. David, take it over.
Yes, sir. Andre, how you doing, man? I want to say that I thought you did enough to certainly win that fight. You were ahead on my scorecard. So I thought you did a good job. I thought you did you proved yourself a lot to the fight fans. So I think everybody's going to be looking forward to your next fight. Now, about Carl Froch, were you surprised at how effectively your gamesmanship was able to get into his head? Were you surprised by how sloppy he fought that fight? Because you must have seen tapes of him, you know, his two fights against Jermaine Taylor and John Pascal. I'm sure you've studied his style. Were you surprised by how he chose to fight you on the night of the fight?
No, not at all. I was surprised that he actually got off with a lot of stuff he did as far as the holding went and the slam and stuff like that. I didn't think he was going to be that rough. I knew he was going to be rough. I said it numerous times, but I didn't think he was going to be that rough. I was more surprised with that than anything. I knew I was going to be able to hit him when I wanted to and get off like I wanted to, you know. So I wasn't too surprised because he's a sloppy fighter. And if you can make a miss, you can make him look that much worse. So that's what I did, and he got even dirtier, you know, period. So I wasn't surprised.
Now, there was a lot of heat between you guys before the fight. But, you know, right now, as I'm talking to you, you sound like a very nice, very pleasant young man. So, honestly, is there anything personal between you guys, or is that just part of the hype for the fight?
No.
How do you feel
I'm
now?
I'm telling you, Listen. Lead up to that fight, man. I even had to write back to one of the sports writers because they were putting a lot of false stuff in the information. I mean, in the media, you know. And I'm reading these comments about Frost saying he's gonna do because he heard this, and Frost saying he's gonna do because he heard that. I don't let nothing, period, point blank, outside the ring affect what I'm gonna do inside the ring. It's nothing personal. It's a job. You know, we both been doing this as kids. You have to respect that, you know, and I respect what he does. I respect his sport, you know, because I do it, you know, and he should respect me as well. But anything personal, he took from it. I didn't. No, there's no grudges. Like I said, I'm mad at Fox. He tried. I said that in the interview. He tried, but, you know, I fought four fighters that night. It was Fox, the referee, and two judges.
Now, let's just say Jermaine Taylor ends up pulling out of the tournament and someone will have to come in to replace him. Do you guys, meaning the fighters that are involved in the tournament right now, have an idea about what kind of system they have in place just in case something like that would happen so that it would be fair for the guys who already have points and also for the new guys coming in who might not have any points?
Right. That's how you're going to come in. You got to get it how you live. If you feel you're the top dog, then you should be satisfied with anything. But I feel if you take in the place of a fighter, especially Jermaine Taylor's case, you lose once, you out, you know, period. Jermaine's already lost, you take Jermaine's place. You know, you come in with no points, prove yourself, man, period. I ain't got none. If somebody come in right now, they'd be with me. We'd be on the same boat. So welcome to the team.
You just fought in England, and your next fight is going to be here in New York, and Abraham would have to come to the U.S. Yeah. Do you think there is this, you know, danger of having this tournament and the results be slightly how do I say negatively affected by the idea that, you know, it seems like you guys are doing this back and forth tug of war between fighting in Europe and then fighting in America, you know, and then you know, let's say it comes down to decisions, and then, you know, maybe the results can be a little bit tainted because people will always criticize hometown decisions.
I didn't know. First of all, I didn't even know it was gonna be in New York. If this is what it is, how y'all find this out? It's going to be in New York? I didn't know.
So I guess everybody's saying New York.
It was sent out to all the media, you know, that's going to be at Madison Square Garden.
Man, I didn't know. Well, okay, that's what's up, you know. I wouldn't mind that. But, you know, a lot of fans are going to have, they say someone is, you know. And hometown is going to be a big issue, especially off of the mark they just set with me and Fox. So it's always going to be a hometown issue from here on out. I honestly believe if they do let fighters fight in their hometown leading up to the finals, then when it comes to the final two, then I would imagine they would have it somewhere neutral. I would respect that more than anything. That way, even if they did cheat you all the way up to the finals, then, you know, it'd be neutral, you know, in the finals. So I give the fighters that much respect, if anything.
I have one quick last question, Andre. Now, I'm from Baltimore, and one of the local Baltimore fighters, Mike the Persecutor Pascal, was in the ring with you earlier last year. Can you tell us what you remember about Mike?
About Mike Pascal?
Yes, sir.
He threw me off a lot, man. He was kind of confusing because one minute he would want to bang, and then the next he would go to boxing, man. It was kind of funny, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't feel like fighting that night either. You know, I just caught him with a punch. You know, I just caught him with a good punch. But he was a hostile guy. You could tell he got that hunger, that anger. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't think at all, though. I don't believe he's too much of a thinker as far as fighting goes. You know, he's just a ballroom boxer. No disrespect, but I think he's just a ballroom boxer.
Yeah, thank you for taking your time to answer my questions, Andre. I wish you luck in your next fight, brother.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
Andre, man, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, you know, away from training to chop it up with us hardcore fight fans on Leaving in the Ring. I can't wait to do it again, and hopefully we can get you and Arthur at the same time because I enjoy every time you do an interview. You're outspoken. You just lay it on the line, and you let everybody know what's going to happen. And I got some big money on you, brother, so please take it all the way.
Well, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, man, don't have us lose those dollars now.
Hey, man, I'm on it. I'm at it like a crack addict.
I heard that, brother, man. Hey, be safe, and can't wait for the next fight with Arthur Abraham.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go, guys. We had Andre, the Matrix Durrell, come on and chop it up a little bit about his opinion about the Frotch fight or what happened to him, and a little bit about Arthur Abraham coming up, and he kind of spoke on a little bit about Jermaine Taylor. If you're just tuning in, you just missed Andre the Matrix Durrell. We're going to take a real quick break. You know, I know some of us has got to, you know, maybe go get, you know, some water. Some of us go get our beer. Some of us have to go to the bathroom, whatnot. If you're calling in, try to ask a question, I apologize. But we got a lot of time. We got to kind of keep moving and stuff. We got a lot of stuff to cover in the game right now. So let's go with a quick break. Back to it.
Yeah. Hey, yo, I walk the walk, talk the talk. New York's most livest, and I'm Iverson. Killer Cross, vanilla Porsche with diamond rims. The mommy man, vibing it. Sometimes I'm live on a creek right behind you. Leave your seeds right beside you, nigga. Yeah, of course I'm mad, of course I'm bitter, nigga. Wouldn't you be motherfucker? 10 years in the same shit, nothing but the same hit. Revisit the catalog, been in it since analog. Damn it, dawg, I don't know which planet you landed on. Gotta understand it, dawn, I came for slinging grams around. Yeah, young niggas ain't got nothing for me. 8 times, see me 16 bars, yeah. You could never, ever, 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 ever get on my level. Smack the shit out the devil. It's the guard crack, fully armed strap with a bronze sack. Hope your guns clap, cause we ready for combat, nigga. Yeah, I put that on the Bronx, man. And that's my word to pun Rio, Psycho, Smeals, most legendary, most prolific MCs. It's hereditary, terror squad, click, and we all spit. Motherfuckers don't believe me, then watch the youngin' shit, cocksucker. Hey, yo, Tone, man, I know you sitting, man, but shit on these niggas one time,
yeah,
man.
D-O-N-Y, sunshine, hope, you gunshine. God damn it, the flow sick and I'm so fly. Now who you know, sling mold dick and some choke tie. Quite like, nigga, tonight you might die, nigga.
Hey, yo, you rapping, nigga. Yo, John, you rapping, you killing him, nigga.
Okay, we started this. Beef, we slaughter, kid. Please, you and the starter, kid. Try to kick some harder shit. In fact, switch the reggae tone. Spit on some retarded shit. This is gangster music. Joey Crack, bring in the chorus, kid.
Yeah, crack. You singing, nigga. Strike. Terror era. Terror squad, nigga.
Take that with you, cocksucker.
Yep, 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 yep. Your Boy 97 Ruff. We got Blood, Strike Heart, 916 Chris, David Chen on Leaving in the Ring. We're back, man, from a little short break. You know, if you haven't had a chance, if you want to call in, your call-in number is 345-215-7598. You can call in, chop it up with us here on Leaving in the Ring about boxing. Or if you want to talk a little bit about some MMA, you can too. We got other guests to be calling in very shortly. You know, we got a top rank guy that wants to make a stop by real quick and chop it up with us real quick. So, hey, Machine Gun Red, get on the horn on that one, brother, and get my man a call in so that we can get this moving. You know, I know there's a couple other news that are happening in the boxing world, but I really want to kind of recap a little bit about Andre Durrell. You know, Blood, seeing that this kid is just ultra confident about what he wants to do in the ring, you know, I don't know, man. I got a lot of high hopes on this kid. I know a lot of people were self-doubting it in the beginning, you know, but I said that this guy was going to be able to prove that he belonged in this tournament. What more of a take did you get off of Andre Durrell hearing him speak firsthand today on Leaving in the Ring?
Man, first of all, I like to say he's a real positive brother, well-spoken. You know, he's very confident, and he's backing it up too, man. I mean, the loss that he had, that was controversial. And I think this is something that he's learned off of. I got that impression that he feels he's learned off of that. Because if you heard him, he kept saying, if I fight him again, I'm going to knock him out. So basically, I feel like, you know, he learned a lot from that fight, from that loss. And he still sounds like he has that confidence, like he has that swag. And I look forward to seeing him fight in the future. I think he's got a long career ahead of him.
David Chen, any concerns about him stepping in the ring on with Arthur Abraham a little bit about what he was talking about, or you think his head is set just right in getting in there with the king?
I think he's going to be able to get out of there all right. I don't think he's going to get hurt like Jermaine Taylor did. My only concern is, can he use stick and move and win a decision against Abraham? Because Abraham is undefeated for a reason. You know, it is difficult to win a decision against a guy who fights that way. If Andre Durrell is going to be criticized for holding and running too much against Carl Froch, I can only imagine, you know, what is going to be the case with Arthur Abraham when he gets in there and then, you know, feels that pressure firsthand, you know, in person, and then feels like, you know, I really need to just, you know, move around this ring and get out this guy's way. So I'm really concerned about his ability to win a decision in that fight, because I don't think he's going to stop Abraham. But I also think he's going to get out of there all right. You know, he's a very, very nice young man, and I don't see him hurt, and I don't think he will.
Absolutely, man. Any final thoughts, Strike Heart, about Andre Durrell, what he was talking about with Froch? Because, you know, you said you were one of the self-doubters of him. And you kind of changed your mind after seeing that bout with Carl Froch and how well he was able to do things in there and how well he was able to expose Froch a little bit in that bout.
Right. Yeah, it was his fight to win or lose. And I ended up scoring it a draw with the 1 point that I had to take away. He lost. And, of course, the other judges that scored against him gave Froch one more round than I did. But, I mean, should that fight ever happen again, I would have to say I think Durrell would be right in saying that he would knock Carl Froch out, because, I mean, really the only reasons why I scored most of the rounds that I did for Froch was because that Durrell wasn't doing enough to take the round away from Froch. He was just being more active and coming forward, and Froch would hold on or go down to the canvas, or, you know, he just needed to be a little bit more aggressive than he was, and he would have won that fight easily on my scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
Defense is big, but it's not everything. So anyway, I really do think that Durrell proved that he deserves to be in the tournament. And even though he lost the fight, and a lot of people think that he won, I think that his stock in boxing has only increased, regardless of the fact that he has a loss on his record. And honestly, like we've said millions of times on the show, that's only good for a fighter anyway, because after a while, you start to protect the zero instead of take fights that the fans deserve to see. So he doesn't really have that anymore. So he doesn't have an excuse to avoid guys down the road because he doesn't have a zero to protect.
Absolutely.
So those are my thoughts. Yeah, those are my thoughts on Durrell. I see a bright future for him no matter what. As far as Abraham goes, though, I'm a little bit worried for him, like David Chen is, because there's a good chance that he could go out there and perform really well again and lose another decision, and then he's stuck with 2-0s. You know what I mean? So he's going to have to definitely take it up another level, because Abraham is, in my opinion, a much better technical fighter, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with that than Carl Froch.
No.
So
no,
yeah,
and you're
he's definitely
right.
Going to have to
Abraham,
take it up a level.
Right, definitely. And he's going to have a different type of strategy against Arthur Abraham, because what I saw with Arthur Abraham, he can adjust. He's a very intelligent, very underrated, smart, ring smart, and intelligent kid. You know, this guy
patient
can
too.
Adjust.
Patient.
Very patient.
I'm yelling at the TV screen, and this man's just calm, chilling out, knocks a man out with seconds left in the fight. I mean, that is patience.
Patience. Absolutely, man. A lot of patience. Really knows how to work that ring, control the ring, and really when he gets to that comfort zone, there's no stopping Arthur Abraham. I think we got Steve from Top Rank on the line, so I'm going to check real quick. Steve from area code 949. Go ahead. Is that you, Steve?
Hey, yeah. What's going on, guys?
What's up?
How you doing, brother?
Good. How are you guys?
Steve, good. Now, Steve, your last name is Ren. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes. You got it right, spot on, first time. No, yep, that's it.
All right, Steve Ren from Top Rank, your social media. So go ahead, man, and break it down to us and what is in store. I mean, what's the announcement that you want to make for Top Rank right now?
So basically, you want to tell all your listeners and stuff that if you guys are heading out to Vegas to check out the Firepower fight on November 14th, on the 13th, which is Friday, we'll be at the weigh-ins. We're going to be covering that, the Twitter, Facebook, our whole social media team. And then we've worked something out with MGM. So at 4:30 on Friday the 13th at the West Wing Bar, we're going to actually have a tweet up. So we're going to have people that are following us on social media, other blog sites and whatnot. We invite you guys to come join us. MGM is going to get 50% off some of the specialty drinks, or they're going to do some drink discounts. We're going to have a couple giveaways, and we're going to have a bunch of other people just kind of show up and some surprise guests. So it should be a pretty fun time and allow kind of the online community that's been, kind of conversating about boxing, firepower, just things in general, to kind of meet face-to-face. So I think it's going to be a good event. We've got a pretty good buzz going right now, and, I'm just making my rounds, trying to get more people involved and interested and let them know what's up.
Now, Steve, is this is based on for just 21 and over, or anybody can come? Because you said right now some drinks.
Yeah, it's anyone can come. I mean, obviously, you've got to be 21 enough to get the drinks, but it's an open bar area, so there's like lounges and there's sofas and stuff, so you can bring your kids and stuff, and we can talk about boxing and whatnot. But yeah, definitely 21
right.
and up if you're gonna drink. But other than that, it's an open area, so you come through with the entire family if you'd like, and be happy to see you guys.
Yeah, because, we got to clarify, because how Latinos do it. We'll bring everybody, man, from our cousins,
hey,
cousins,
like it,
our grandma. We'll bring our dogs and our cats.
Hey, man, we'll take them all. As long as they're following us on Twitter, man, we'll take them all.
Let me ask you this. Now, when they're following you on Twitter, is there a possibility that any listeners will get a chance to get a glimpse or an autograph of Miguel Cotto or Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, right now we've got a great giveaway. So for every 50 followers that we get, we randomly select from the entire from all of our followers for our Firepower giveaway, which allows one lucky person, maybe even two, to meet Miguel and Manny in person during the weigh-ins. They'll be also watching the closed circuit fight as the special guest of Top Rank, and they're going to get an autographed glove and a couple of other giveaways that we're going to include in this mystery grab bag of memorabilia. So it's a pretty good promotion. Top Rank is putting it together. I was kind of trying to twist their arm to throw in the kitchen sink and all the other good stuff. But if you see us around, and we'll be pretty visible, just come hang out with us, and we'll try to give everybody backstage access. I mean, if we get access to it, that's the thing about our social media thing, is we're like one of you guys. We're not trying to be the press, and we'll have those badges and whatnot, but we're trying to bring along as many people as possible. So if we can get in front of Manny, and we can get in front of Miguel, maybe they'll drop by for a quick hello, and sign a few things. But no guarantees, but we'll try.
Absolutely. And you can find them at twitter.com/trboxing. Am I correct?
Correct. That's it.
All right, brother. Well, thank you. I appreciate it coming through and dropping this news to everybody, to the listeners of Leaving in the Ring. So, like I said, if you want to get part of this and you want to get a chance of going down to the Vegas for the weigh-ins and possible get a glimpse of Manny Pacquiao Cotto and the prizes and the drinks and stuff, and you can bring your whole familia if you want to, all the way down over there to the MGM, this is the time to do it. Get on your Twitter, start checking things out, and hopefully you're one of the lucky ones that have a chance to go down there and, hey, get an autograph.
Yep, exactly. Hey, thanks a lot, guys, man. This is great.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Have a good one, brother.
Thank you very much.
You too, man. Thank you.
So there you go, man. I mean, that's a pretty good deal, Blood. I don't. What do you think, man? You know, all you got to do is follow the guy on Twitter.
Hey, man. I'm following him right away, bro. Now, that's a great deal, man. Very nice of him, you know.
Absolutely, you know, and I know a lot of guys would want to do that. If you're going to the fights, I know Red right now is looking for somebody to go with him and stuff, to go down there to Las Vegas so you can check it out. So I think, yeah, you know what, why not? I may want to go down and go over there to the weigh-in and be a free, I mean, you know, discount drinks, you can't beat that. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I heard that, brother. Don't get caught by you down there.
You know, them drinks might help. Exactly. You know, them drinks, though, might help out a strike card. I don't know if I want to take Jesse drinking, though. You know, Jesse drinking may finish up all them half-discount drinks before we even get to them, man. You know, you never know, man. We got our next guest that's going to be calling in a short bit, so we're going to take another quick break, brother. Let's listen to some Method Man. This is your boy from Leaving in the Ring.
Keep it moving. side. And if you're ready to spark up the Mexican, let me hear you say stimuli.
Playing some straight hip hop today, huh, Blood?
Yo, that's classic right there, brother. And Method Man, release your dough, homie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
First album, Saul, homie. That's, hey, I know you like that strike card, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Of course I do. Takal. That is a classic album right there.
Hell yeah. Thanks to courtesy of, Rob Riller over there, kicking it down. Over here sending us the music now. He's complaining about Fat Joe, though. We're talking about Fat Joe, Rob. Crazy, dog. Well, we got a few minutes before we have Justin Frimmer calling in about his Born and Bred. This is a movie about fighters, you know, the triumphs of these young guys, young kids being born and bred into being world-class fighters. He's following their careers as an amateur and see whatnot, what it comes out of it. You know, it looks like a great film. I don't know if you guys, have you guys had a chance to check out the trailers on this movie, Blood?
Yes, I did, man. Let me tell you something. I can't wait to see this. And, you know, anything that has to do with kids that are doing something positive, especially underprivileged kids who get a chance to do something that's not about committing crimes, I'm all about it, man. And when I saw the trailer to this right here, man, I mean, man, it's one of those documentaries that's going to touch my soul, man. I could tell. I can't wait to see it, bro. I can't wait.
I can't wait either, man. I mean, it's got me pumped up, you know. I know, honestly, right now, Justin's going through some things where he's having some problems releasing the film because of some copyrights. So he's going to need a little help from us and the listeners to get some funds in there to get this movie released. And this is a must, you know. If you're a hardcore fight fan, you're going to want to do whatever you can to try to get this film out because this is a jewel to the fight game. This is something that we need in our sport to keep the sport alive, to keep pushing the message that this sport needs these kids in order to keep the sport moving. Strike card.
Hey,
have you had a chance to check out?
Ruff, how much do they need, though? About how much are we looking at as a community to pull together? What are we trying to come up with?
You know what? I don't want to give a wrong number, so I think I'm going to wait till he comes on and tell us a little bit of how much they're going to need. And then because I think it's about, I don't know, man. I'm going to have to say it's about 50,000 if I remember correctly. But you know what? Got to find out. We just got to, you know, when he comes on, you know, let him chop it up a little bit and let us know exactly what can we do to help him out, to spread the word, to get the funds, to get this movie in the movie theaters, okay, so that we can go and enjoy 2 hours of something that we truly, truly love. Strike Art, have you had a chance to check this out?
Actually, I have not, but from what it sounds like it'll be like the Hoop Dreams for boxing is the way that you guys are making it sound to me.
That's
a good comparison. That's a, you know, kind of the same thing, except Hoop Dreams only dealt with two people. I think we're dealing with a whole community of people here, you know. So I think it's even bigger than Hoop Dreams, you know. I think it's going to touch a lot more people.
I hope so. But yeah, I mean, I'm a big documentary guy myself. First of all, I'm a fan of documentaries in general, but you throw boxing in there now, it's two things I love. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to speaking with this guy as well. And if he needs help, then I know we're more than willing to be some of the people to help him out. So.
Absolutely. David Chen, have you had a chance to check out the trailer of this movie, Born and Bred, that is hoping to get in the movie theaters and needs our help? The boxing hardcore fight fans, Leave It in the Ring, there will be blood, stand and fight. They need our help to get this movie, you know, for the finished production, to pay off these copyrights, to get it in the big screen.
I sure did, and I was really impressed. You know, they have the original music. It seems like the filmmakers really had a clear image of what they wanted. You know, it feels like they really want to tell the real story of boxing, not the kind of stories you see. You know, the real story that really need to be told. You know, almost like the kind of stuff that we want to do here. You know, talk to the real fighters and see where they come from and see what drives them. You know, basically show boxing as a lifestyle. You know, as a real thing, not just, you know, superstar sporting events that happen once in a while. So this is the story. This is the film that needs to be shown, that needs to come out. You know, I know I personally want to see it, and honestly, as a fan of the sport, I hope, you know, everybody sees it. You know, that way I think our sport will be appreciated even more. These are the kind of films that need to be made.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. You know, Chris916, you had a chance to kick out the film that's, you know, needs to be in the theaters. I mean, I can't say it more over and over and over. You know, it's got to be in the theaters. Born and Bred.
Actually, I just watched it right now while you guys were talking. Good comparison to the Hoop Dreams. Definitely looks like it's along those lines. I'm interested in seeing it more so, not just because of the storyline and everything, but because it seems to be focused heavier on Javier Molina, who's a cat I've been trying to, you know, ever since I started seeing him in the amateurs and starting to come up in his career, I've been interested in seeing how he does. Well, I believe he signed to Golden Boy now. I may be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure. So looks like it focuses heavy on him and his brother, so that's a particular interest to me.
You're right. You're absolutely right, man. And you know what the thing is, this is the interesting part, is that it looks like he really captured the moments, you know, the moments of what it is to be a fighter, an amateur fighter, what it is for these kids to really try to come up in the rankings in the amateur game. You know, what it is, the hardships, the love, the family, you know, the community, you know, the roots of boxing. It looks like he really was able to just put it all in one good mixture. You know what I mean? It's like one good big pot of salsa that he was able to serve up, and I can't wait. I want to see it. I really want to see it real bad. I mean, it'd be another great documentary for this year. First you had Tyson, now you got Born and Bred. You know, and I think if I'm right, we may have Justin on the line right now, so let's just check real quick. Area code 323, go ahead and state your name, brother, where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Justin Furman, the director.
Justin Prim, how you doing, brother?
Pretty good. How's everything going there?
Good, good. Well, now we're just kind of discussing your film. We were talking a little bit about it, letting the listeners, if they haven't heard about Born and Bred, which I highly doubt. I think everybody's heard about it. You know, it spread like fire right away when you had dropped the trailer on it on YouTube. I know a lot of people were sending it to me. That's how I was able to come across it. And I can't wait. I mean, can we get a little bit, first off, before anything else, can we get into why the film hasn't been completed and pushed out to the theaters?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit just a bad timing that things were finishing up when the economy kind of crashed down, and independent film sort of relies on private investors to get the films, you know, finished and out there and from beginning to end, and so a lot of the private investment has pulled back, so it's not just this film. It's a lot of independent films right now. So the film, you know, was pretty much coming to the end of things, and it's finished now. But there's a number of issues with the rights as far as, you know, there's a lot of different various footage in the film, anything from, like, clips from HBO to ESPN, certain archival footage from past boxing things, from immigration protests that were in the film. And all these various things, they add up. It's a lot of money, you know. I mean, sometimes it's only a few seconds and can cost thousands of dollars. So essentially where we're at now, the film is finished, but we can't put it out until all these things are paid for unless we want to get sued and lose everything. So essentially I decided just to reach out to the boxing community and you know, see what kind of support is out there and sort of, you know, sort of reach to people and just tell them, you know, where things are at. Because I know a lot of people are boxing fans. They're not entirely, you know, sure how movies come to them. You know, you go to the theater and you watch films, but you're not really sure how, you know, they come to them. A lot of independent film is sort of relying on the people that it's about, you know, to give you that grassroots support to, you know, to bring it out. So, you know, that's happens in different ways, and you know, I'm just using this this new sort of social media way to connect people. And you know, right now we're doing a fundraiser in which we're, if anybody pledges, you get anything where from a DVD to an iPod download to tickets to the premiere, you know, all sort of things. So rather than just asking people for money, we're essentially, you know, pre-ordering DVDs and whatnot. So
let's get down to the dollar sense of how much are we looking for to raise for to pay off these rights to get the movie on the screen. What exactly is the amount?
The amount we're raising is $50,000. So that will essentially pay for all of our final rights issues that we have, as well as getting it, you know, in a handful of theaters, L.A., New York, and then various theaters across the country, depending on, you know, what theaters are where. You know, it's just that'll play out as we move forward.
Let's get down to how did the idea come about? I mean, you know, documentaries, you're making one about boxing. Was it a little difficult to get anybody to really, and even investors, to kind of say, okay, I'm going to put some money into this film, when really boxing has always been looked as a very dark sport, or a sport that really is kind of on the lowdown? It's a hush-hush type of thing. Nobody really talks about it unless you're in the corner speaking it to a friend.
Right. Yeah. No. It's been very difficult for me getting. I mean, for the most part, the film is fairly self-financed. I just sort of, you know, have been grinding it out. I've had a couple small investors that had come in throughout the film, you know, and pitched in and whatnot. But most of it is just myself. I mean, boxing. It's a very, you know, it's a tough situation right now as far as you know, where the sport is at. I mean, it's pretty much driven, you know, by these mega fights on HBO and on Showtime and whatnot, and apart from that, you know, you have very little exposure of the sport to people. And for the most part, when you're talking about boxing in a film, most people are looking for stories that happened, you know, long in the past, you know, and sort of is a almost a romanticism or nostalgia about boxing. You know, they want to see they think of boxing as the days of Muhammad Ali and, you know, and Cinderella Man and stuff like this. So, you know, people don't really have any idea what's going on in boxing, except for when you have these mega fights, and then you have, you know, like HBO 24/7 and things like that. And if you're a hardcore fan, then you're into it. And if you're not a hardcore fan, then you just get this little glimpse of it. So it's a very tough thing, because if it's not a huge name that's attached to it and a sort of, you know, well-known story, is tough. I mean, my own interest in it is I was really interested in what is happening now and today and in the present, and, you know, making a story of what's going on now and how people are living their lives in the sport now, rather than something from the past. Because, I mean, as far as you have recent documentaries like Tyson, I mean, it was a good documentary, but, I mean, people already know that story. I mean, the footage in there, I mean, it's already been out there. You know, there was a Beyond the Glory episode on Tyson. It pretty much was the same thing, you know, but because Tyson is sort of a larger-than-life figure, you know, people are still attracted to him. And for a lot of people, that was the last boxer that they knew of, because, you know, it was after Tyson and sort of De La Hoya started fading away. I mean, no one really has stepped up for, you know, these major fights. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very tough thing. But, I mean, documentaries in general, it's an incredibly you know, sort of brutal way of filmmaking. It's sort of the boxing of filmmaking. And, you know, all of it, I mean, Michael Moore has sort of been the name of it, but, I mean, if you take Michael Moore away from it, I mean, nobody could really name a documentary filmmaker, you know, the way they can for, like, Steven Spielberg or something like that. So, I mean, it's a tough way, but, I mean, you know, it's documentary filmmaking, it's documentary will stick a lot longer with you when you see them, because it's real life and you can relate to them so much more, you know. And whereas with a lot of, you know, fiction films and, you know, big films, you escape to them for a couple hours and you forget them. With documentaries, it's you know, multiple years put into the film, and it sticks with you, because everyone can relate to sort of that long struggle.
Absolutely, you know. I mean, let's go a little bit back. You know, you're mentioning, Mike, the Tyson film, okay? Obviously, the Tyson documentary, it had a guideline of a story. You know, it was much easier to pop, you know, to document it and to have it already in completion in the filmmaker's mind. In your case, how did you come about doing a storyline, you know, and following that storyline when really life always has, you know, left turns, right turns. You never know exactly in what direction it's going to take you.
Right, exactly. Well, the very beginning, you know, I was kind of looking for a great documentary subject, so I was exploring all these different things, and it was really almost random where I was literally walking by a boxing gym. There was a guy outside sweeping, and I started talking to him. You know, he was the trainer at the gym there. He said, yeah, you know, we're having a tournament next weekend. You should come by. I'm like, sure, okay, you know. And I myself, I didn't really know anything about amateur boxing. You know, it's like my experience in boxing is purely, you know, from watching professional fights. So the guy, you know, said, you know, told me to come by and watch it. And, you know, the first time I went to it, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, an absolutely amazing thing. And unless you're involved in amateur boxing and you're around it and you see, you know, the kids and you see just what happens, you don't really know anything about it. And for me, it was just kind of mind-blowing because there was such this intensity of things, and almost like you have two entirely different things where you have, I mean, boxing's a violent sport, even where it's kids and they can't hit that hard. It's a violent sport. At the same time, it's a very much a family sport. So, you know, the first time I go to these fights, you know, I see these little kids fights, slugging it out, you know, kids getting, even young kids getting dropped. And, you know, the moment they come out of the ring, you know, their mom's crying and hugging. And it's a very warm feeling. So I'm like, well, this is, you know, just a really amazing culture. You know, it's like I need to find out how, you know, what's the best way to tell the story. So the first person I actually went to when I was exploring it is this woman, Melanie Lay, who runs this amateur boxing website. And she's worked in the sport, you know, for about 20-plus years. And asked, who are some of the fighters today, what gyms? And she told me to go this gym, that gym. And I just started exploring. And as I went to the different gyms and tournaments, I sort of found the stories through that, where one gym that I went to was Commerce Boxing Gym. And there's a pair of twin brothers, the Molina brothers. And they not only they're, like, great boxers, they're good-looking kids. They have, like, you know, that sort of all-American feel almost to them. And, you know, I thought this is perfect. You know, they're twin brothers, and they're right at the age where they're going from fighting boys to fighting men. So that was sort of one side of it. And then on the other side of it was another gym that I had found, which is the Eddie Heredia gym in East L.A. And on that side, it's almost like the opposite of the Commerce Shop Boxing gym. But the Molinas are very much like good boys. You know, they're very humble, you know, they're very, you know, much, you know, take pride in who they are. They're very quiet. And with this other gym, I found this kid who was coming up, who was, I think, he was like 13 at the time when I started, and his name was Victor Casillas. And he's the complete opposite, where he's totally unfiltered. He's, you know, almost like the bad boy of box. You know, he doesn't care, you know, he talks a talk and walks a walk, you know, so he was almost like the, you know, the bad boy of the film. You know, I mean, he's a great kid, you know, but I mean, he definitely, you know, he prefers life, you know, a little bit rougher from the streets than the end of the gym. So that's where how the film started out, where I have two gyms, were both in the East LA area, literally a mile apart, and I just sort of let the stories go from there, and the story just kind of made itself, where it was almost like the perfect storm of all these different lives, you know, coming into very, particular kind of challenges where, you know, they're going from fighting boys to fighting men. They're going into adolescence where, you know, all that confusion of life's choices and, you know, how to make good and, you know, both inside the ring and outside the ring. And then as the Olympics are coming up, that's a whole nother world that comes into it, and just kind of one thing led to another, and just everyone's life was just at the right place at the right time for the film.
What was the toughest part you feel in filming this? I mean, there's got to be a moment where it was heart-wrenching for yourself, where you kind of go like, oh my God, you know what, I can't believe this. You know, finding in the amateur boxing.
Yeah, the toughest part, I mean, the toughest part is really just continuously filming and making, you know, getting the funds available to be at a right place at the right time, because the main story of the film became one of the, or both of the twin brothers, as they're trying to make it to the Olympics, and they kept losing, and there's all these Olympic qualifiers to in order to make it to the trials, and if you don't win one, you got to go to the next one. So they kept losing, and so they would have to go to the next tournament. And all these tournaments are all across the country, so I mean, not only do they have to find the money to fly there and, you know, take the time off from school and work and everything, but I did as well, you know, and you know, it went from one city to the next where, you know, we'd you know, be in Tennessee, and then the next week would be in Florida, and then, you know, we'd be in Colorado. And so, you know, it's, and no one really knew what was going to happen. You know, we didn't know if, I didn't know if this, if they, these kids are just too young and we're going to lose, or if they're going to make it, you know, and what the story was, and if I should keep filming, or if I should just say, all right, this is getting just crazy. You know, I'm going to you know, end up homeless trying to make this documentary. So really that was it. You know, that was in 2007, when all this was going on, and, you know, and just, I just knew that there was an incredible story there. And I knew that I had something one of a kind, that could never be captured again. And it was a certain moment of history. I mean, not only it was just about boxing, but you have to realize this is during the time of the immigration protests in Los Angeles, where, you know, where these kids were coming from, and, you know, took part in the protests themselves. So it was almost like a moment of history where there was a certain, you know, feeling of struggle for change and trying to make it not only in their own personal lives, but in this larger landscape, you know, of where they are coming from.
We got Justin Frimmer, the filmmaker of One and Bread. He's on Leaving in the Ring. He's asking for the boxing community to help out, make some donations to keep this film up and making so they can get it in the big screen for the hardcore fight fans. Okay, if you guys want to contribute, you can go to thewillbebloodfightshow.com, and I'm pretty sure Justin will give us a direction of where we can contribute any money or anything you can give out to keep this film alive. Justin, go ahead. Is there a link that anybody can go to make a donation?
Sure, yeah. If you go to bornandbredmovie.com, I put a link just straight to the site where we're raising funds. And also, I just want to point out, I mean, we're not really looking directly for donations. It's sort of this new way where you're making a pledge, but it's essentially a purchase where you give $10, you get a download of the movie when it's out, the same way as if you go, you know, to the iTunes site and you download any movie. And if you make a $25 pledge, you get a limited edition copy of the movie. So essentially you're making a purchase. So the times are tough right now for everyone, and to ask, you know, for money outright is a little bit tough. So essentially you're making a purchase of the film before it's out, and you're making it at the same time you're making it possible that we bring the film out. So it's an interesting platform that we joined up with this company called Kickstarter, which is a New York-based company, and it's sort of a pledge drive where everyone makes a pledge, and you don't have to pay anything until the full amount is reached. So you're not really risking anything. You know, if we reach our full amount, then you get your DVD, your download, or you get tickets to the premiere, or whatever you decide you want to pledge. So it's a great new way of sort of letting, you know, the film fans decide what they want to see, rather than, you know, only being able to see what Hollywood decides to give you.
Wow. Absolutely. And this is something really important, guys, that you got to do, you know, help out with this pledge. Make sure this film comes out. Make sure that we have this, because, like I said, this is a jewel to the boxing community. You know, let me ask you this, John. How long did it take out of your life to complete this film, to get this, all this footage? How many hours, you know, estimate do you feel that you had to do in effort of making this?
Well, I don't know hours. I mean, it's been 3-plus years. You know, filming of it was about 2.5 years, or so, maybe a little bit over that, you know, but, you know, a lot of it was, you know, sometimes it was, you know, where I'm putting, 70, 80 hours a week in it. Sometimes, you know, it was a lot less where, you know, we'd have lulls and there would not be nothing going on. So it's hard to estimate the number of hours, but it's definitely a lot of hours, you know, and it's 3-plus years at this point. You know, of working on all the different elements of it, you know, from filming it to editing it to, you know, finding all the music for it. I mean, it really is a, you know, it's a huge project. with, you know, a lot of different people have become involved in it at points. I mean, the film, I couldn't ask for it to turn out better. I mean, it's just a phenomenal film. It's going to be a great soundtrack with the film by this hip-hop artist, VZ Scante, who is one of these up-and-coming hip-hop artists, you know, that is just about ready to break out, and I just happened to find him at the right time. And a lot of other different things, a lot of other different people that is helping out with it and whatnot. So, you know, it's been about, you know, at least 3 years. So, I mean, the film is definitely, you know, it's something, you know, where in, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, it's something people will still be watching.
Absolutely. I know I will be. I know that once I get into my hands, I'm going to be watching it a couple, more than three times in a day, man. I can't wait for this film to come out. Let me ask you this. When you're filming this, at any time, you know, because this is, it's human nature, you forget you have this camera in your hands, or you forget you're working. You know, did you catch yourself just so caught up in the moment that you go, and like, let's say these kids are fighting, somebody lands a blow, or somebody gets dropped, and you're like, oh, shit, you know, or oh, my God, you know. At any time, did that happen while doing this, or did you, were you always focused that you were doing a job?
There's times, definitely, because you're in, like, an interesting place in your film. I mean, a lot of the times when there was fights, you know, we'd have two cameras, and I'd operate the camera on the ring. And so when you're up on the ring operating the camera, you sort of have a unique perspective of things, because I have a mic on the trainer in the corner, so I can hear what's going on with him. Then I have another mic, you know, on the camera that's directed at the ring and the action. So I'm essentially, you know, on the ring right there at the fight. At the same time, I'm listening to everything is being said. And then, of course, when we go back to the corner, you know, I mean, it's sort of a strange thing, and I'm standing here in the corner with the camera, you know, as these guys are having really intense moments. So, yeah, I mean, there was definitely a couple of the big fights where, you know, I myself wasn't sure, you know, if the main guy was going to win or lose, you know. And so I would get tied up in it because, you know, I can hear the scores and what's going on and everything, you know, and you know, I'm starting to get, you know, like, you know, butterflies in my stomach, you know, wondering if it's going to win or lose. And, you know, you get caught up in it, and, you know, you got to try to distance yourself and you know, be detached and just film, you know, because it's, you start getting involved and you forget all the things that you're supposed to be doing, and, you know, making sure everything's in focus and the sound is coming in good and everything like that. So, I mean, it definitely happened, you know, more than once, because it's pretty intense, you know, where it's not only just the boxing, but you know, it's people's lives, and it takes quite a while before you reach a level of trust with the people that you're filming, because you can't just go and throw a camera in someone's face and expect something great to come out of it. You know, it's you got to develop a relationship with them, and for them to trust you, where they can feel like they can be themselves in front of the camera, and you're not just gonna, you know, make them look stupid and you know, and turn it into something where you just, you know, where it's just for pure, you know, entertainment sake. Because, I mean, that's a lot of documentaries where you get a lot of documentary subjects and a lot of, you know, reality TV stuff where you're essentially, you know, like, these people are just, you know, kind of, you're just, you know, laughing at them. They just, their lives are crazy, you know. And so, I mean, it's to have someone, people's lives like this who you know, have a lot to win and a lot to lose, you know, to open themselves up. I mean, that's the toughest part because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of just emotional moments in the film, you know, because, I mean, you know, there's definitely losses with the wins, you know, and there's definitely a lot of, you know, a lot of tears that come to that, because it's, you know, it's everything in their lives to be able to make it. So, you know, that's the real thing is that for there to be a level of trust and to know that, you know, that they're going to be on camera in front of, you know, thousands of people at some point, and they want to know that their lives, you know, are respected, and that, you know, it's not just entertainment for people and they're not looking stupid. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing, is just to balance that, you know, where you're it's just a film, yeah, but, you know, it's people's lives that will be, you know, on a film for the rest of their lives. So they you know, they want to look like, you know, like real human beings.
Absolutely. You know, just let me ask, at any time, though, during the filming, you know, because we all know that not everything, is, the grass is not always green, you know, the sky's not always blue, at any time, whereas there's somebody filming and they weren't aware of it, and they kind of freaked out on you a little bit, where you might have lost that footage, where you were like, oh, man, I got some good footage here, but now it's going to take some convincing for me to use it.
Were they didn't like that they were being filmed, you mean, or?
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, there's a father there that sees his son get dropped and he gets knocked out or he loses the match and doesn't want you to have that film on there, you know. Is there any point where something like that came along? Or a family member, you know, asking you, hey, what are you doing? Why are you filming?
I mean, not so much of that, because that's one thing with documentaries is you learn, you have to get a release from anybody who is on camera. So, I mean, that's something that's you just a requirement. So I know that before any fight happened. So I would, if I was planning to film any fight, I would always go to everyone beforehand and get a release from them, tell them what I'm doing, you know, and that I'm not part of any promotional thing, you know, it's purely independent, and get them, you know. Of course, when another fighter loses afterwards, you know, they don't really want to be part of it. But I never really had anything where someone just outright was you know, angry that they were on camera or anything like that. You know, I mean, they certainly anyone who had, you know, their difficult moments in the film didn't want these parts in it. But I mean, I was very much honest with everyone and explaining, you know, how things, you know, are going to play out, and, you know, that you got to take the good parts with the bad parts. So I never had anybody that was just downright angry or, like, you know, or any sort of confrontational things, you know. I mean, you know, not that I can remember.
Right. I'm going to pass it to the panel. We got a lot of calls, too. I know there's a couple other people, fight fans, are calling in and probably want to ask you some questions.
Sure.
But we're going to pass it on to my co-host, Blood, a.k.a. Marlon Jordan. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead and ask Justin Frimmer, the film director of Born and Bred.
Hey, first of all, I'd like to say the film looks very interesting. But I have a quick question. You said it spanned over a 3.5-year period or something, or 2 years?
About 2.5, 3 years. I started it, I think, at the very, very end of 2005, really about beginning of 2006, and then it goes all the way up to, I think, April of this year.
Okay, and what age groups are we dealing with here, pretty much?
Well, I mean, the main kids are the Molina twins, who are 15, just turning 16 when I start. The other main kid, Victor Pacias, is, I think, 13 when we begin. But there's a lot of, I mean, apart from the main sort of subjects of the film, you know, I've just footage of literally hundreds of boxers from, I mean, really age, you know, age one to on up, you know. I mean, you know, the little kids who just put on gloves, you know, and their parents start teaching them, you know, how to throw a punch, you know. But I mean, obviously you can't fight till age eight, you know. So I was really entranced by just the part of boxing culture in which kids are pretty much, you know, raised to be a fighter from day one, and are, you know, brought up in families who are, you know, have many relatives who box. So my focus was on those kids coming up. So, you know, anywhere from, you know, little kids up to, you know, once they start fighting in the men division, then, you know, people all the way up to, you know, in their 30s. So it pretty much spans the whole thing from when you start at the, you know, boxing to when you're into the professional ranks.
Were you satisfied with the conclusion of such a long documentary? I mean, because, and what made you decide to conclude, too? I mean, because going for that long, there must have been something that made you wrap it up. Say, okay, it's time to wrap this up, you know.
Yeah.
What
I was really focused on was that transition from when kids fighting other kids into when they go into the men's division, and that transition, sort of, which is the biggest really transition in boxing, because it's, I mean, you're a teenager, you know, adolescence, and most great young boxers, that's sort of the point in their lives where they either, you know, or get distracted and hit the streets, or they somehow find a way through and make it, you know, for all great fighters, you know, that was sort of the transition. So that to me was what I thought the greatest stories were going to be, because that's really where the challenge is of how people confront, you know, the difficulties going on inside them of, you know, you're no longer a boy, you're learning how to be a man, and then all those uncertainties and challenges and revolting against your parents, and, you know, the what people telling you what to do. So I originally planned to end it sort of after that transition into the men's division, but the story kept going on and on because the two brothers decided to go for the Olympics. So I ended up with this insane story of them trying to make the Olympics at such a young age, and that just took on a life all of its own, because that went on for another year through 2007. And then I ended up just I don't want to give away the story unless you know, I mean, if you know that who's
right.
The boxer's value, I mean, you know what the sort of what the story is. But then I came back to it to wrap it up when one of the fighters, Javier Molina, turned professional and was on ESPN for his professional debut, and I thought that would be sort of a great way not only to end the story, but actually use that as the beginning of the story, where the story begins him making his professional debut on ESPN, you know, and just as he's about to go out into the crowd and you know, the lights and the cameras, then I cut back to, you know, this is where it all started off, you know. So that was sort of, for me, the perfect transition where, okay, this is, everyone knows what, you know, boxing is on TV and the crowd and all this, you know. That was sort of, for me, that's perfect to place to start off and, you know, go back where it all started and, you know, how, you know, sort of a boxer became a boxer and what, you know, what that involved.
Do we get any idea of who the fighters are outside of the ropes through, like, some interaction and dialect? Did you do some filming on things that do not have to do with boxing, just to get an idea of who the fighters are?
Yeah, entirely. I mean, I explore a lot of different lives in the story. I mean, it's a boxing film, but at the same time, you know, it's as much of the story happens outside the ring, so... the lives of the twin brothers who, you know, they were in high school and dealing with all of that. And, you know, I mean, their lives were pretty much entirely either boxing or school, because they're actually honor students, you know, and, you know, getting, you know, 3.8 GPAs. And so their lives were really regimented as far as, you know, they at school, hit the books, hit the ring, go home, go to sleep, you know. And so a lot of that was just exploring how they were able to deal with as much sacrifice, you know, because essentially they sacrificed their childhood for, you know, for future glory, and why their friends were, you know, taking off, going out, and, you know, enjoying things, you know, they were hitting the books and then the ring, and then, you know, watching their weight and all this stuff, you know. So, I mean, you know, that was one story. And then their trainer had, you know, his own insane story where he sort of had a very tough road to this point where, you know, he'd wanted to be a fighter himself and things didn't work out. He'd been in the army and then he got out and, you know, things were tough. He ended up then, you know, going to being a trainer, and he sort of found his calling through that. And so his own story, you know, was where he's this up-and-coming trainer, you know, and just sort of getting his feet on the ground, and this being his, you know, his first great boxers, you know. And so his life, you know, where it was at the perfect moment where he was ready sort of to put himself out there. And, you know, I mean, he almost invited the cameras, where he, you know, he likes to talk a lot, and yeah, he liked that, I think, the opportunity to show his, you know, all of the years of work and struggle that he's had, you know, with his fighters. So that was another story. And then the other gym, the young fighter Victor Pesillas, had a completely different story, because he hadn't lost for about 4 years and I don't want to give away too much of the film, you know. But I mean, he reached a point where you know, things weren't as picture perfect as he thought they were going to be, you know, and you know, ended up, you know, hitting the street and you know, testing out gang life and, you know, like you know, hitting the guns and the drugs and all that stuff, you know, and trying to figure what that was all about and fighting his way through that. So so that was, you know, a whole nother story. So really, I mean, that was sort of the model for it, is where I wanted a lot of different stories to show the whole realm of what people's lives are, and, you know, not just one view of one life, but to show all these different intersecting stories that you know, that would resonate in other boxers' lives, and they identify that, but resonate in people's lives who aren't boxing fans, who never, you know, watch fights, but understand what is, you know, the struggle and what's happening in that. So.
Okay, well, I'm very interested in observing how these individuals took their path, man. It sounds like there was some barriers there. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to pass it on to co-host Strike Hard.
Okay, thank you.
All right. First of all, I'd like to tell you I appreciate you continuing to not give away too much of the movie.
Sure.
That's always a big downer.
Yeah, I mean, I can give away a lot, but, you know, a lot of it's also how I made the film. I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot of how you do it. So there's a lot of different layers to, you know, even just individual moments, you know, where even if I told you the whole story, I mean, you could still watch the film and get a lot from what's going on. And so, I mean, to me, that's kind of the point of making a film. If you can just tell somebody what the story is and that's everything, there's no point in even, you know, making a film. You might as well just tell somebody the story. I mean, what makes it a movie is that visually you're encompassing all these worlds that you can't just, you know, describe easily. But, you know, they open up all these layers of emotion, you know, and life and, you know, and struggle and victory and defeat and, you know, moments of history and all this, you know, and all of it coming into to play at the same time, where, you know, it's not, you can't just take it and say, okay, he won, he lost. I mean, but it happens, you know, just through the images.
Right. Yeah. And one of the questions that was brought up before we got you on here was, had I seen the trailer? And no, and I didn't get into the reason why, really, but I'm not really a guy for trailers, because I've noticed, and I've stopped watching them after a while, the trailers kind of have an arc to them in the same way that the story in the movie does.
Right.
And there's sometimes when you walk away from a trailer and you feel like you saw a 2 or 3 minute version of the movie.
Right.
So, hey, tell me a little bit. I haven't seen your trailer on purpose. I know about your film. I heard Hoop Dreams and When We Were Kings mixed together, and I got the idea, and I said, I'm on board. Documentary, I like that. Boxing, I like that too. So that was good for me. But is your trailer safe to watch, or is it one of those trailers?
Yeah, entirely. I mean, the trailer sort of, you know, it has sort of the broad strokes of the film, but it doesn't divulge too much and. I mean, the trailer was actually really difficult to make because there's so much in the film and it's about so many things that it's not, you know, like, easily, you know, like, where you can just, you know, boil away all the fluff and just, you know, have the story. I mean, there's a lot to the film that, you know, the trailer to me, I mean, the trailer is pure marketing. I mean, what you want to do with the trailer is you want to get people excited and interested in, you know, like the emotion of it, you know, to get them to the theaters, you know. And then once you have people in the theaters, the film speaks for itself. I mean, I shouldn't have to, once the film is there, I don't need to say anything. You know, you're watching it and you see what it is and you know, you experience the whole thing. So, I mean, yeah, the trailer is almost like a separate thing from the movie where, you know, I mean, it's, especially with independent film, I mean, the point is you have to get people excited about it and you have to get people into the theaters to see it or to order the DVD or however they you know, decide to see movies nowadays.
Advertising is everything. I totally agree with you there.
Yeah, it is. And especially with independent film, I mean, because it's so incredibly expensive to get any film out. I mean, even if you have a film like this recent film, Paranormal Activity, I mean, it was something like $10,000 or $15,000 to make the film. But in marketing-wise, right. They spent $10 million. I mean, $10 million, that's a lot of money. I mean, that's, you know what, like 10,000% more than the cost of the movie to make. But that's what it costs to get a film in order for people to even be aware of it. Because if you don't spend any money on it, you know, you're completely dependent on just word of mouth, grassroots, you know, and it's a tough way to go. So I mean even a film like that, you know, I mean they market it as only cost $10,000, but I mean they spent $10 million in marketing. I mean you're talking about, you know, a serious amount of money there. So I mean the trailer is the one thing that you can sort of you know, get to a lot of people, you know, in an easily digestible way and to get them excited about it, you know.
Uh-huh. My next question for you is exactly how did the bridge between, and maybe you could go just a little bit into the background of how you got into the whole documentary business, but how did that bridge between the boxing and you wanting to make a documentary happen? Were you a fan beforehand, or is it something that it kind of fell in your lap as a project to do?
I was probably more of a casual boxing fan before. I'd watched just the big fights. I definitely wasn't a hardcore fan before. And so, I mean, probably there's multiple things how I ended up being so attracted to this kind of film. You know, I mean, really what attracted to me is really the world of amateur boxing. I mean, the world of professional boxing, I mean, I don't know, I mean, what kind of documentary you could really make about a lot of that, because people pretty much, you know, like what happens in that, you know, there's all the HBO stuff. And I mean, it's pretty obvious what a fighter is at that point, you know, and to make a documentary, it's got to really have a crazy story, you know, that goes above and beyond, you know, anything out there. But in my own interest is that I'm looking for a subject that transcends just, you know, just regular life, that it opens up into this whole other world, you know, that you can't just easily digest, that, you know, takes you to places that you don't normally get taken to, you know, just sitting on your couch and watching TV or even sitting and watching a fight, that takes you to, you know, a world. And for me, that world of boxing, it's very much a world of paradox, where you're having a lot of these violent physical things. At the same time, it's a very much like a tender emotional relationship between boxer and trainer. I mean, when you sort of separate, you know, everything out, and you're just watching somebody in a corner with their trainer, you know, in these very emotional exchanges, in which it's always, you know, this play of you know, building up confidence in the person you're in charge of training. You know, it's a very intense exchange, you know, and you're almost like going to war with this person, you know, where they're trusting you to tell them the right thing and to, you know, to win and not get knocked out and, you know, have your own confidence, you know, obliterated in front of, you know, a crowd of people. So for me, there was just a lot of, you know, resemblance to what happens in real life, you know, condensed into the world of boxing, where, I mean, you can watch what happens to a ring inside the ring, and it's essentially what happens to people throughout their entire lives, and it's just condensed, where you're at some point, your many years of struggle is coming to a point, and you're being challenged, and you have to step up to the challenge, and either you'll be victorious or you'll lose, and your resolve is tested in a very in-depth way, and where you've come from your life is tested in an in-depth way, and how you box is, you know, reflective of how you live life, and, you know, how you win and how you lose is how you, you know, the same way people win and lose, you know, in regular life. It's just not so dramatic and definitive and violent and whatnot. So to me, it was just, it's the perfect sport where you're actually watching life, you know, being played out in a very condensed way that you did. No other sport really has that, because most sports, you know, it's a team thing, and you know, and life isn't about the team. Life is about the individual and how you know, from birth to grave, how you figure out how to work things and you know, how you figure out how to win and get by, and how you figure out, you know, to get meaning from life, and you know, what you decide, how you decide to live your with your family and with your friends. And I mean, and all this really plays out in a very strong way in the sport of boxing and stuff. I mean, that for me as a filmmaker, that's what interests me. I mean, you know, I'm interested in both fiction and nonfiction, you know, and so for a nonfiction subject, I mean, it's I think just a, you know, incredible subject that goes beyond just the sport.
You've definitely summed up one of the big reasons a lot of us are attracted to this sport ourselves. This is kind of a funny question I have.
Sure.
I looked at the way your pledges are all worked out, and I noticed that if you pay $45, you get the DVD and you get to go to the LA premiere, but if you pay $50, you get the DVD and you get to go to the New York City premiere.
Right.
I myself am much closer to New York City, so what I want to know is what makes the New York premiere $5. More awesome than the LA premiere.
It's actually probably a lot more than the $5. I mean, New York theaters in general are more expensive than LA theaters to book. So that was pretty much the reasoning behind that. It's probably actually more than that, but we were just trying to balance out the cost. And I was just trying to divide up the pledges according to what people would want to see or want to buy and where they're at. So, I mean, obviously, LA and New York are the big towns for movies, you know, as well for boxing. I mean, these are probably the two biggest boxing towns, and as far as at least, you know, fights and where people are. So, I mean, I was trying to divide it up. But, yeah, I mean, in general, New York is a more expensive town, so that's the only reason for that.
I was hoping for a much more provocative reason than that, but I guess I'll have to take that. So, with that said, I'll pass it along to Chris.
Okay.
Hey, I just have a couple questions because, unfortunately,
sure.
I'm feeling a little bit under the weather.
Sure.
My first question is in regards to – actually, both my questions are in regards to your main subject, Javier Molina.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's a kid that, you know, along with all your subjects, that you kind of grow attached to throughout the making of the film. Is even though you're not really a fan of professional boxing, as you said, you know, not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a fan of professional boxing. I still watch all the big fights, and I watch a lot of them, a lot more of them now. You know, just as far as just a documentary subject, I was more interested in amateur. But no, I mean, I know all the fighters, you know, today, and have met pretty much most people in professional boxing at some point. You know, so yeah, I'm pretty much involved in both.
Oh, okay, all right. Sorry about that.
No problem.
But do you think that like just that you spend so much time filming him and stuff, you'll be taking a special interest in just seeing how his career develops, you know, not just now, but throughout, you know, as long as he continues to fight?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I still talk to all the guys in the film, you know, and I'm sure we'll be friends for years to come. And, you know, and I filmed his professional debut, and I didn't see his second fight because it was out of town and it wasn't on TV. But yeah, I mean, I'm very much interested in seeing how you know how he does. I mean, he's definitely a very you know unique fighter, and he's definitely very young. So I mean, he's still got a lot of years to develop as a person, both you know inside the ring and outside the ring, to you know to sort of you know develop what it takes to you know to be a world champion fighter and to be a great fighter. And as well as just, you know, a person that people want to, you know, that people can empathize with, you know, both, you know, not only how you fight, but what you say and what you're fighting for. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with him. You know, I mean, he'll definitely do very well because, I mean, he has, you know, 100-plus fights in the amateur ranks and, you know, fought in the, you know, all over the world and everything like that. So, I mean, he has the skills and, you know, I mean, a lot of these fighters, I mean, you even today, I mean, you fight already in the amateurs that people don't realize, you know, that like, you know, De La Hoya and Mosley fought in the amateurs, you know, a couple times. And, like, a lot of these guys, you know, I mean, fought in the amateurs, you know. So it's like you just, you already fought a lot of the same people and seen the best of the best. It's just when you get the professional ranks, you know, it's you have more variables of life and you get, you know, other fighters that step up, you know, that weren't really that good in amateurs, you know, or came up late and all that stuff, you know. So, yeah, I'm interested to see you know, how he does, and, you know, I wouldn't even mind at some point doing a reissue of the film, you know, that includes, you know, what happened to, you know, him as a professional, you know, years down the road.
All right. And my one other question is, I mean, I think it might pertain to Javier probably more so than others because, although I haven't seen the film, I presume he's probably been the most successful of those featured in it. But did you see anything? I know when fighters are coming up, especially when they're starting to get close and coming to pros, there's a little bit of seediness with, I don't want to say agents or, you know, not necessarily promoters and managers, types like that, that are trying to get their hooks into these kids for their own financial gain. You know, it's like that with pretty much any amateur sports. Did you, even if you didn't film any of that, did you see any of that, any seedy characters, you know, kind of trying to latch onto these kids just for their own benefit?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. With that, I mean, as far as when you're talking about professional ranks, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, it's a cold hard business, and you have to, you know, function like that. I mean, that's one of the big transitions. In amateurs, I mean, it's very much everyone's out for everyone else, you know, and it's this camaraderie between everybody, you know, that even the guy you're fighting, you know, it's like you're usually friends with them at some point, and, you know, it's good feeling. So, but when you get in the professional ranks, I mean, it's a business. You got to make money. So, I mean, I didn't really see too many people try to really use them that much. I mean, it's even for the promoters right now, it's a pretty tough business, and with the way the sort of the Olympics have played out, you know, I mean, a lot of them have tough going trying to just, you know, figure out how to promote these guys, you know, considering that no one really knows who they are in the same way that if you win a gold medal in the past, everyone knew who you are. So a lot of them are trying to figure that out. And that, I mean, I don't have anybody I would say that they're just outright, you know, seedy and despicable. I mean, it really seems like there's only about five major promoters in the U.S., you know, that are really, you know, put on big fights, you know. So, I mean, everyone pretty much knows who they are and how they've made their name and who they've got sued by or haven't got sued by. And, you know, so, I mean, I don't think there's anything unique as far as that I could, you know, bring up in that, you know. So it's tough enough. I mean, boxing's like tough as far as because there's nobody really doing anything new in boxing. I mean, the people that are pushing the sport of boxing are HBO and Showtime. I mean, they're the ones doing the most interesting things as far as, I mean, what sells these mega fights recently is 24/7. I mean, and you have these fantastic little, you know, their documentaries combined with promotion, you know, people get really involved in their lives, and, you know, the numbers on these fights wouldn't be nowhere close to they are without things like that. And the same thing with the Showtime thing, where they, you know, have done this very unique thing and people get involved with it, you know. And so these cable networks that are pushing things. I mean, the promoters these days are doing the same thing they were, you know, 5, 10, 20 years ago, where they just sign the fighter, you know, they bring him up, they have a, you know, get him, you know, a 20-0, then they get him, you know, bigger fights. But I mean, I think there's a huge opportunity right now for promoters if they want to really reinvent the sport, because the sport of boxing is not going to do well unless you reinvent it, because UFC right now is just, you know, I mean, every day they're trying to do something different. You know, their fighters are getting better. They're you know, constantly on TV, constantly going for big things, constantly trying to move into the mainstream, and they're getting better and better and better, and they're evolving and they're maturing. And boxing promoters are not doing that. They're just, you know, most of these guys have been in the sport for 10, 20 years, and they have their niche, and they're not really interested in taking risks. And if you're not going to take risks, you're not going to progress. You're not going to move forward. You're just going to have the same sort of thing, and everyone's going to complain that, you know, you only have, you know, two big fights on pay-per-view. You got to pay $50, and no one else knows about them, you know, unless you're really going to take risk, you know, and take these fighters, you know, and you know, and market them the way a fighter needs to be marketed, you know, in 2009, and coming up with innovative fight promotions, you know, and all this stuff. So I'm going to get back to your question. I mean, as far as the seediness in boxing, I mean it's no different than it has been, you know, and I never observed anything that was you know, too awful.
Absolutely. You know, real quick, we got Justin Frimmer from the film director of Born and Bred documentary. It's a film that needs to be released. Real quick, just can you one more time give out the link and where people can, you know, send a pledge, you
sure,
know,
yeah.
So for the film can be completed. And can
yeah,
get
if you go
history.
To bornandbredmovie.com, and there's a link straight from there on the first page before you go into the site. That'll take you to the to the fundraising site that explains everything, explains the film and everything going on with that and how you can pledge and what you get for your pledge and all that. And there's a film blog you can get through from that I update. And there's a lot of footage I'll be putting out before the film comes out that I just didn't end up using in the film. I mean, I already put out I interviewed Mike Tyson and it just didn't work for the film. So I put that in there and a lot of other interviews that I did with, you know, different professional people. I interviewed Fernando Vargas and Evander Holyfield and, you know, various promoters and managers and, you know, all these different people that I'll be putting out there, and as well as just doing writing on it about the film and about boxing and filmmaking and all that. So, yeah, I mean, the thing that's nice with, you know, how media works nowadays is, you know, there's the film itself, but there's all these little branches of how you can interact with people and get, you know, more than just a film, but this all these other worlds too, you know. And also if fans are interested in getting their own things out, if you're a fighter and you want to get, you know, something out there, I mean, let me know, because, I mean, I have a blog which, you know, a lot of people going to, and if, you know, you want to get something out about what you're doing and you have video promotional thing, you know, I mean, you know, I can put something on there and write about it, you know, and that's the most important thing, is that everybody sort of helps everyone else out, you know, so it's, you don't just feel like, because a lot of people in boxing, they feel like it's, you know, they're just struggling by themselves to try to make it in the sport, you know, and, you know, until you get that big break, and, you know, there's a big community out there, and boxing is a very loyal, you know, fan base of people, so, you know, I mean, I need to get this film out as much as whoever you are in boxing, you need to get yourself out there, your promotional thing out there, whatever you do in the sport. So if you have something that you want to, you know, get promoted through the film, you know, please contact me. And, you know, if it's something interesting you got going on there, I'll, you know, post it.
Absolutely, brother. I appreciate you taking the time and talking to us and letting us know how we can help you out with this pledge and raise this $50,000, you know, so the hardcore fight fans can know more or less what they can do to get this film out there, because it's very important for our community to support this and to have this film, because, like I said, I believe it's a jewel that's added to the community that's going to make the sport to stay afloat and where it belongs. So right. I appreciate you coming on, Justin Frimmer, the filmmaker of Born and Bred.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother, and have a good night, man.
Oh, you too.
All right, well, there you go, guys. You know, a quick interview. I apologize if there was people waiting that wanted to ask some questions, but we got to move along. You know, there's a lot of things we got to cover up. I'm going to patch in Jesse Reek, because we changed Jesse Reek in the name. It's going to be Jesse Be Drinking, you know, because Jesse's got a love for this alcohol. And I got to find out, man. Jesse, you know, I heard about it's funny,
what's
man.
What's going on? Is this what I was told to call in?
This is why you were told to call in, because I had to kind of clear this up with you, because I thought this was hilarious. You called Red to call Art from Stand and Fight. What fight, first off, were you at when you called and you were feeling good?
that was the fight where Telesco got knocked out.
That was the what?
That was the fight when Telesco got knocked out.
Okay, so you're there, man. How much you had to have drink first off? How much were you drinking? Did you notice you were a little buzzy or anything? Or it was just like, man, after you hung up, you're like, damn. You know what? I had too much to drink.
You know what happened? I fell asleep on the train after that call, actually. So I didn't get home until like 6 in the morning. But what happened was I was out with
good thing, first off, good thing you ain't traveling to San Francisco, brother, because your cheeks would look impregnated right now and stuff, man. If you fell asleep, somebody would have had their way. You would have made some little dude and stuff, some little gay guy happy, you know, seeing some little Puerto Rican dudes passed out. They would have been like, well, nobody's watching and nobody would care.
No, what happened was, yeah, after the fight, we had we split a bottle of vodka, and it just hit me so fast I didn't even see it coming. And I don't even know how much I had, but I finished the bottle.
Okay, let's go back though real quick, okay? What were you drinking that night? What were you having? Were you drinking hard liquor?
Grey Goose.
Were you drinking beer? What was going on?
Grey Goose.
Damn, Grey Goose. Yeah, that'd have done it. So you call up Red, and you said what? What was going through your thoughts right there?
I actually don't even remember the whole conversation, but I remember telling him, call Art up, and let's be the first ones to put up Telesco got knocked out. And he was like, oh, okay. He was like, well, I'll give you Art's number, and I'm waiting for him to text me Art's number. And then I was like, I forgot. I was like, yo, am I doing a good job as a PR person? Something like that. I don't know. I don't know where the conversation went to. And then he was like, yo, man, you twisted? I'm like, no. He's like, yes, you are.
Hey, Blood, man, this is some comical shit right here. I mean, this has got to be the most funniest thing in the world, bro. When somebody's so twisted, they're out there to do a job. They're supposed to be PRing, but instead they go out there and party up a storm, and then they call our other PR, you're like, yo, listen. I mean, you know, the only thing I got to say, man, is I would have some concerns, though, dog. You fall asleep in the sub, you know, you're passed out. I mean, you're not a little worried. I mean, you might be violated in some way.
You know what happened? It's such a long trip from Yonkers back here to where I'm at. So I just knocked out, and I missed my stop, actually. So I had to get back on the other train and come back.
Wow, that's funny. That is funny. Well, you know what, man? I've got to say this, you know, because I know you came from taking from behind and all, but, you know, and they would frown on that. But, you know, being that we're brothers and stuff, I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. When Red calls me up and tells me this, you know, because we're dysfunctional people. We're Latinos, you know what I mean? This is something, you know what I mean? Blooded African-American, you know. Blood, you know, we fam, you know. We've done this many times. We call each other up a little buzz. I even gave Art and Red, man, some angry emails the other night and stuff. I was drinking, and I said, who can I blast at right now, you know? So it's only human nature. Let's get some hardcore fight fans on the line and see what's going on and what's popping and what's on their mind. Let's go real quick. I think we got your partner, Red, on the line. Red, are you there?
What's up, baby?
What's up, doggy dog?
Hey,
so, man,
hey,
you
hey,
tell
hey.
Me. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to tell my side of the story real quick. I'm kicking back.
Go ahead,
I'm
tell
chilling.
Your side of the story, because this is funny. This is funny.
I'll kick it back, and I'm chilling. All of a sudden, I see Jesse Rieken's number on my phone, so I pick up the phone.
What time was it, first off, Kevin?
What happened?
What time was it, first off? What time did he come through and call you, buzzing?
Man, I don't remember. His time had to have been maybe like 11, 12 or something. I think it was like 7:30, 8 o'clock my time, something like that. So by his time, maybe about 11:30, 12, I don't know, something like that, time difference. But to go on the story, I pick up the phone, and I can't understand a word this dude's saying, partly because he's screaming, another partly because I don't know what the hell, what language he's speaking, right? He's like, he's all over the place. Hey, man, he's like, man, stop this, man. And I'm like, hey, Jesse, what's up? Are you all right? He's like, yeah, this guy just got knocked out, and I didn't know who he was talking about. He's like, yeah, I just got knocked out in the first or second round. We need to be the first ones to put it up. And he was like, I was like, all right, that's cool, but I'll send it in. Well, I don't have my laptop, so call Art, and I'll give you Art's number, and then tell him I'm going to give him the information over the phone. I was like, what? Are you serious? I go, all right, check it out. I'm going to go ahead and text you Art's number. So instead of texting Art's number, I call Art, and I'm calling Art, and I'm already rolling because I already know Art, and I know what he's going to say, right? So I sit down and go, hey, Art, Jesse Ricky wants you to call him so he can give you the results for the fight show that he's at. He can give it over to you over the phone, and you can type it up. And Art's like, what the fuck? And he's like, hell no. He's like, you better tell that boy to go find a computer, right? So Art hangs up on me. So I'm sitting there stuck, and I'm just fucking driving down the road. So I call up back Jesse Reakin. Dad, I can't understand shit that this dude is saying at all. So I tell him that Art said, hell no. And he's like, all right. So he hangs up the phone, and then he calls me back later. And this is probably when he was real drunk. Because he was talking and slurring all over. I was like, man, you're right.
Oh,
yeah,
man, I can just hear this.
You.
Hey, Blood, can you imagine this dude calling you up and saying, he made a left, he made a right, he's on the left, he's on the ground, he's 24. And he starts, and can you imagine this cat just starts talking to you in Spanish, drunk, and he says, cayó, y también, oh, go! Oh, man. Anyways, man, hey, Jesse Ricky, just keep doing your thing, brother. We love you here and Leave It in the Ring. You know, this was a great experience. We had Andre Durrell. Andre Durrell earlier and stuff. If you miss Andre Durrell, he talked about Frost. He talked about Aaron. He talked about Jermaine Taylor. He talked about a lot of things that you're going to be wanting to listen to back on. We had Justin Fremer that came through with the filmmaker of Born and Bred. We also had Steve Wren from the Top Rank Media Social, who does a Twitter. He had a great little addition to add to. Said there's something that you can win, and if you follow the Twitter, and there's a possibility you can meet up with Manny Pacquiao and Miguel Cotto. Okay, so real quick, man, let's get some thoughts of some other people that's on the line. I know they've been waiting for a minute, so let's go with real quick. Area code 281, brother. What's on your mind, and what's cracking?
What's up, fellas? Man, it's Ashy Knuckles, man. I'm just listening in. Thing was
good. What's up, Ashy? How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm living, bro. So I heard what was going on in the background. Y'all had me laughing. I almost woke up my son, man.
Isn't that some funny shit, though, man? I mean, that's hilarious. You know, I mean, you know, that just tells you the kind of bond that we got, man, you know, here in Leaving the Ring. You know, you join the family, you become family, you know. Some people would probably shy and frown on that with what Jesse Reakin did, but I thought it was hilarious because I come from a dysfunctional family, so these guys make me feel right at home.
Yeah, we dysfunctional for sure here at Leaving in the Ring. You the head of dysfunctional, bro. So you up here laughing at other people, but you dysfunctional, the most dysfunctional motherfucker on this motherfucker.
That's true. And then we got one cat that does a video, and he's doing what is it, telepathic, you know, which is so far. Did you guys see that shit? Did you guys see that?
That was live, man.
I was just like, what the hell is this dude doing? First the dude's biting the cat's head, okay? Then he takes out his gun. You know what I'm saying? I was like, this should be some parental guidance on this video. Then you got David Chen. You got David Chen and stuff, man, who got the samurai pretty much telling you if you disagree with him, he's going to cut your head like Kill Bill. You know what I'm saying? You got Rob Riddler, who calls everybody a crackhead, who talk all this shit on his chat room, and then when he gets on, he's like, the question I was going to ask was,
Whatever.
You know it's true.
Whatever.
Then you got my man Machine Gun Red, where you can only follow two words out of his 15 sentence he spits out in 1 second. You know, all you hear is hi, and bye.
Whatever.
916 Chris is probably the most stable guy out of Leaving of the Ring right now, you know. But, hey, we're going to crack him pretty soon, you know. Actually, if you listen, I mean, you know, Chris is at that breakthrough. Ain't that right, Chris?
He probably the most wildest one. He probably doing something right now that we don't want to know about.
Oh man, I'm just gonna play my role like you know them serial killer types that just lay real low and no one knows what they're doing until they get caught.
That's true, man. Hey, you know, we got 10 minutes left and stuff. So Chris and Rob Riddler are MMA correspondents from Leaving the Ring. Go ahead and drop, man. Any news in the MMA world?
Yeah, there's some news. Anyone that saw UFC over the weekend knows what's up, man. Main event, Lyoto Machida defending his title against Shogun, and it was like watching the end of a boxing match. The guy that won gets robbed of the decision. And I know Rob was going for his boy Machida, but even he knew who really won that fight.
Yeah, I'm a thoroughbred Machida nut hugger. I'm going to say it on air right now. I'm like the biggest Machida fan you'll find, and Machida definitely lost that fight. That fight was garbage.
Yeah. I'll tell you the one good thing, though, is, you know, I mean, it happens rarely in boxing, occasionally, but at least they're making a media rematch, you know. So even the, you know, the main promoter agreed that the judge is kind of screwed up on that one. So at least they're trying to get some redemption there, if nothing else.
Is it true that the decision got overturned?
No, man. Where'd you hear that from?
I heard that. I heard some crack-ass friends of mine talking shit about me to fucking call me up at 3 o'clock in the morning talking about the decision got overturned. Never mind.
The problem is you got boxing judges like Cecil Peoples. I'm sure anyone that's been and knows boxing knows who Cecil Peoples is. He's one of the judges. I mean, he may do some MMA stuff here and there, but he's still going on that old boxing criteria. If a dude's standing up throwing punches, he's winning in old people's mind.
He's on the Spike TV, what the fuck that thing called? The Tough Enough Show, right?
Well, I don't think so.
I think he's one of the main... Because I think he just judged the fight tonight. I think I just saw him there, like, see, so I saw Cecil's people. I was like, what the fuck?
I don't know. Maybe he is. But anyways, aside from that, man, the main event that was supposed to go down next month, Lesnar-Carwin got delayed. Brock Lesnar's got the damn swine flu. So, man, I guess that's just catching up with everyone eventually. Kind of sucks. So now the main event's going to be Tito Forrest. That's not nearly as much luster as Brock Lesnar. Even though we know people like Riddler love Brock Lesnar. Ain't that right, Rob?
Nope. Yep. I got a Brock Lesnar poster right on my door with the dick on his chest.
I'm sure you do. I don't want to know what you'd be doing with it up there, though. Anyway. All right. The last news, man. I know all the boxing heads on here watch that Showtime Fight Camp 360 on the Super 6. They got one of those airing next Tuesday, November 3rd, for this upcoming Fedor Rogers fight. So anyone that liked that Fight Camp 360 Showtime did on the Super 6, they got that going on for Fedor. So even if you don't plan on watching the fight, you might want to watch that just behind the scenes type of deal. I'm curious to see it. And maybe Riddler will watch it. I don't know about anybody else, but obviously I will be tuned in.
Yeah,
Strikeheart, go ahead. Give him the famous call, guys, brother. Go ahead, tell him.
If it's not boxing, I don't care, man.
All right, then. Moving on.
All right. And, you know, just to include real quick, too, Rob Riddler and Chris will be on the telepress conference for Fedor versus Brett Rogers. So you guys have to stay tuned and stuff so that you guys can hear what they had to ask them and what they had to say. Okay. Also, you know, we're going to be posting up pretty soon. Chad Dawson possibly may be the replacement for Jermaine Taylor. They talked a little bit about it on the telepress conference. Okay. So that's something really interesting, you know, and it's something that we need to get Chad Dawson. Red, where you at? Get that dude on. Let's talk about it with him, you know, before his fight comes up with Glenn. You know, or after the fight happens with Glenn Johnson. Hey, this was a great segment, guys. Tomorrow night, it's going to be dedicated to the women, the fighters, the women that go in and they sweat just like the men, they bleed just like the men, and they work out as hard and determined and will. Their will is extreme just like the men. We got Melissa Hernandez versus Holly Holm. Bad blood is what it's been labeled. These two women do not like each other. These two women want to get in and fight each other. If I'm correct, 916 Chris, she's moving up. Melissa Hernandez, they call her the Hurricane, right? In two weights to face Holly.
Actually, three weights. She's a super featherweight. She's moving up to welterweight for this fight. I'll tell you one thing, man. These girls are polar opposites. If you go look up Melissa Hernandez, Holly Holm on YouTube, there's a little short 2.5-minute clip a New Mexico news channel did on them, and you will see Holly Holmes, the real quiet, you know, wholesome girl, and, you know, Melissa, she even compared herself to Hector Camacho Sr., you know, and you kind of get that idea when you talk to her, so trust me, I don't know how much Holly's going to talk, but Melissa's pretty raw, and she's going to say whatever, you know, she's asked, she's going to give it to you real.
Leave it to a Latina to start this shit.
That's it, man, and that's what we want. We want something raw. We need to make sure that this is interesting. So, you know, we're going to update, you know, that I know some fight fans are not into the women boxing and stuff, but, hey, you got to appreciate it. They're doing their part to keep the sport alive as well. So you got to applaud them. You know, like I said, if you're just tuning in, it's got 5 minutes left on the show. I apologize, you just tuned in late, but you can listen back to On Demand on therewillbebloodfightshow.com, Stand and Fight, and if you want to get the best boxing beer, you go to www.havocworldwide.com. Once again, too, you know, our boys from Boxing Truth are giving away 2 tickets to the Zab Judah fight. They're giving it away on Sunday, so tune in, and you may have a chance of winning those tickets and going out and hopefully see Zab Judah fight. Or else, he may just show up and they may announce he may not fight that night. Either way, it's still a good deal. They're for free. Anything for free, ain't that right, Blood? It's just for me.
Damn real.
All right, brothers, you know this is your man, 97 Rough. You got your boy, Blood. You got your boy, Strike Art, 916 Chris, Jesse Drinking, Machine Gun Red, and your boy out of Puerto Rico, Rob Riddler, David Chen. We've been in the house. This is the end of our segment, man. And just got to let you know who's in the house. Leave it in the ring.
The champ is here. The champ is here.
Isn't here. He took it from crack to rap, now he put out 2 anthems a year, and I just want to rock for a century, and then chase the book with the documentary. If you can't do nothing other than flow, life's a bitch like the mother from Blow. Let's go, don't make me put your heart in your lap. Fuck riding the beat, nigga, I parallel park on the track. Hop out looking crispy, fresh and new, and it's 6, but it's a BM and it's Pepsi Blue. And I don't know you, but I know a man becomes a man from all the shit that he go through. And y'all ain't fucking with Jason. After I cash in, there's really no justification of how I'm gonna change the game. So don't get out of line, this little 9 to change your frame. You. Just make sure y'all niggas feel what we trying to do. If I fuck up, then it's on me. Besides that, it is what it is, and that's what it's just gonna be. Blow on my purple, wish you would go on my circle. If you know my record is clean, you know I'ma murk you. I live like a warrior do, without screaming true story. Niggas know my story is true, the cribs, the cars, the jury. Spots I got, the money that passed my hand, and the rocks I chop. The ammo, the artillery, the knives I bought. Waking up sore the next day from fights I fought. In the hood, cause I fuck with the thugs, trying to figure out why the money never added up to the love. Gun in my waist, clutch in my hand. Now I don't do a lot of talking, I listen as much as I can.
Just a standard.
How you doing, baby?
You don't get off of the blue.